Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
So the Supreme Court yesterday agreed to hear three cases involving gay and lesbian and transgender rights. One thing that ties those cases together is the question of whether federal civil rights law already bans anti-LGBTQ discrimination in things like housing, employment, and education, or whether the language in the law specifying sex discrimination doesn't apply. Let's learn more and get a point of view from Gabriel Arkles, senior staff attorney with the LGBT and HIV Project of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. He is an attorney on the team involved in one of the cases, Harris Funeral Homes versus the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. He represents Amy Stevens, a transgender woman who worked as a funeral director and says she was fired because of her sex. Hi, Gabriel. Thanks very much for coming on WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us about your case first? Who is Amy Stevens and what happened to her at this funeral home in Michigan where she worked?
Amy Stevens had been working for Harris Funeral Homes for 6 years. And when she was initially hired, her boss thought she was a man. After 6 years, she told him that she was truly a transgender woman. And 2 weeks later, he fired her, saying it wasn't going to work out.
I see the funeral home argues that federal law prohibits sex discrimination, which is not the same as gender identity discrimination, for which there is no language in the law. Is your job to argue that a statute that says sex discrimination should also be interpreted by the court to apply to gender identity?
So the law says that there's no discrimination allowed on the basis of sex. And every court to consider this question has said that discrimination on the basis of sex includes discrimination against people for being transgender. It's difficult to even imagine what it would mean for it not to cover that. When somebody is an acceptable, highly valued employee as a man, says that she's a woman, and then gets fired for it, that's clearly on the basis of sex.
But the funeral home owner said, according to what I read, that his decision to fire Amy Stevens was based on the owner's religious belief that God didn't want someone who is a man presenting himself as a woman, dressing as a woman, which from what I read was, you know, the trigger for him to fire her, that Amy Stevens came out to him as transgender and said, I'm going to start wearing women's clothing to work, something like that.
So she said that she was going to wear appropriate business attire. And Tom Rost says that women have to wear skirts in the office. So, yes, she would have worn a skirt. And that is, again, obviously because of sex. There's nothing about that. When he says, I'm comfortable with having you work here as a man, but I'm not comfortable having you work here as a woman, that is because of sex.
The lower court in this case ruled in Amy Stevens' favor. Do I have that right?
That's right.
How did they explain, well, I guess they must have explained it how you explained it, that sex discrimination law would also cover gender identity in a case like this?
That's right. They said that that the firing was obviously based on sex stereotypes, and it's very clearly against the law. It has been, at least since the Supreme Court said in 1989 that you can't fire people on the basis of sex stereotypes, and that's exactly what happened here.
And if the case is called Harris Funeral Home versus the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, does that mean that the federal government, the EEOC of the federal government, also came down originally on Amy Stevens' side?
Yes, the EEOC has said that it is discrimination on the basis of sex to discriminate against people for being transgender or to discriminate against them for being lesbian, gay, or bisexual. So this case was originally started by the EEOC, which investigated her claims and found that, in fact, sex discrimination had happened.
Did the EEOC demand that she be reinstated or any other particular remedy?
I can't recall the exact remedies that they sought. It would be typical to ask for reinstatement and or compensation for lost wages.
And that was during the Obama administration, right?
That's right.
This is the kind of case I might have expected Trump and Jeff Sessions or William Barr to have switched sides on and side with the funeral home director on the basis of religious liberty or something. Did they?
So at the lower courts, they did not. But once a case gets up to the Supreme Court, it stops being the EEOC and it starts being the Department of Justice. So at this stage, yes, the Department of Justice has made clear that they are going to oppose Amy Stevens' claim.
Wow. So in that case, if there's no defendant, do they have the standing to just cancel the case and side with the funeral home and make it go away?
So in the Court of Appeals, we intervened on behalf of Amy Stevens because we anticipated that this might become a problem under the Trump administration. So it is actually still a live case with people on both sides. It's just that the federal government is switching sides. But we're representing Amy Stevens, so she will still have her interests represented before
the
court.
So she herself, the fired employee for being transgender, becomes one side in the case rather than the federal government.
That's right.
What's the Trump administration's argument? I know you're the attorney for the other side, but could you characterize their argument that you have to refute on a legal basis since the lower courts ruled that this is sex discrimination?
Yes. Yeah, so the Trump administration has been arguing in this case and other cases like it that discrimination on the basis of sex refers only to discrimination that is specifically based on one's biological characteristics, particularly reproductive anatomy, which would drastically limit the scope of sex discrimination law, not just for transgender people or for LGBT people, but for all people. They also argue that some sex discrimination, if it is based on real differences between men and women, is actually acceptable.
Some sex discrimination is actually acceptable. Talk about that.
So what they argued, for example, before the Court of Appeals in Zarda, which is another case we'll be talking about,
right?
They argued that discrimination on the basis of sex is sometimes acceptable when it is based on real differences between men and women. And the examples that they gave were discrimination in terms of restroom use and discrimination in terms of one's intimate relationships outside of the workplace with people of the same sex. So in those contexts, they're saying that the discrimination is based on, quote unquote, real differences between men and women and therefore is permissible. And there's absolutely no statutory basis for that argument, and the courts have rejected.
Even if they were to successfully make that case, what's the relevance to Amy Stevens? From what you've told us, she was working productively as a funeral director at a funeral home for 6 years, and then she revealed to her employer she was working as a man, as they understood it, and then she revealed that she was a transgender person and would be dressing as a woman when she comes to work, and then they fired her. But the job is funeral director, so what could the professional relevance of her now being a woman have had to do with that?
I mean, it has nothing to do with it, and it's undisputed that she was fired for nothing having to do with her job performance and only because of her sex. Although they would say, I think, that it's based on a real difference between men and women for for an employer to expect somebody who is assigned a male sex at birth to dress in ways that he thinks are appropriate for men to dress.
What do you think the Trump administration is really after here? Because sometimes when you argue a technicality in the law, you really are interested in that technicality, but often you're really using a technicality to uphold something else that's your real interest. So, yeah, okay, they could argue that the Civil Rights Act says sex discrimination. That doesn't cover gay or trans people. But really, maybe they just want employers to have the right to discriminate against trans people. Can you tell?
Well, they've very consistently argued for eliminating the civil rights protections that all LGBT people enjoy under federal law. My concern is that ultimately they're trying to weaken civil rights protections for everybody in the workplace.
Is religious liberty an argument on their side for the funeral home? You know, you as the American Civil Liberties Union would also have an interest in protecting someone's individual liberty to live according to their religious views. This funeral home owner said it was against his religious views to have his male employee, as the owner saw Amy Stevens, present as a female. How do you square the tension between those two civil liberties in this case, and is the Trump administration claiming it?
So first of all, the employer did raise a religious defense in the lower courts, but they have abandoned that before the Supreme Court. They have not appealed on that issue. So the Trump administration, in terms of the DOJ, will not be asked to weigh in on that at this stage. In terms of the broader question, religious liberty is, of course, absolutely vital. But religious liberty doesn't mean that an employer can impose his own religious beliefs on his employees. That's not what religious liberty is. So here, I don't actually think there is a tension between religious liberty and civil rights protections.
My guest, if you're just joining us, is Gabriel Arkell, senior staff attorney with the LGBT and HIV Project of the ACLU. He's an attorney on the team involved in one of the three cases having to do with gay and lesbian and transgender rights in the workplace that the Supreme Court accepted yesterday, the case known as Harris Funeral Homes versus the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, April 26th, 2019. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast forum, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. This is not a spectator broadcast. It is Friday and the weather is starting to get nice, although it is still kind of early spring feeling here in the Pacific Northwest. We've had lots of 50 degree days, overcast, a little bit of sunshine today, but overcast returns. But I assume in other parts of the world, warmer weather, springtime, we could be outside frolicking, doing lots of things. If we are listening to this broadcast, this is about participating and specifically sharing views. Hopefully we figured out at least a few bits of codification that work well for solving problems in the workplace without creating new problems. And or if we have some situations where we would appreciate some different counter-racist perspectives on how we can proceed if we are having some difficulties, that is always welcome. But again, this is not a broadcast for spectators. If you have figured out a few things that work well so that you can get your sick leave, vacation time, get your promotions, get your raises, if you want a better office or to keep yourself from getting moved every other month on the plantation, if you figured out some things that can solve some of those problems on the job, you should dial in. Let us know what you did that worked for you, and maybe some other folks can find similar success. The number, relatively new number, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Before we get to the folks who dialed in, Labor Day weekend, August 29th, which is a Thursday, to Sunday, September 1. That is the date. We are looking for our Labor Day counter-racist retreat, seeing if we have enough folks and if we scheduled in advance. I know that's another holiday that people can sometimes schedule way early for. We will see if we have enough folks. This is for Lake Arrowhead, California. Since we are still aiming for Florida for December at the end of the year, just seeing if we have an option for summertime, being on the West Coast, have fun in Southern California. You can drop an email if you would like to participate, untiljustice@gmail.com. 4 days, 3 nights of counter-racist activities, yoga, vegan eating. Looking forward to having a grand time in Southern California. Folks have already been commenting and saying that they would like to participate. So drop an email if you think you have the free time and would like to hang out. Lake Arrowhead, California, August 29 through September 1 for Labor Day weekend. Back to workplace racism. The audio segment that you heard at the beginning, the Supreme Court case looking at transgender rights and seeing if the civil rights protections cover LGBTQ employees who might be mistreated on the job. I think we've talked about for a number of years the LGBTQ wing of racism, white supremacy. They have done a phenomenal job in a myriad of ways, one of them making it so that racism, white supremacy frequently cannot be discussed without also having to discuss LGBTQ issues, obfuscating, in my view. They have also been phenomenal just at displacing dialogue, where we're not talking about racism in the workplace and how non-white people, black people are harmed in the workplace. We're focused on LGBTQ individuals. And, you know, Fred has decided that he or she is, you know, I identify as a female and want to dress as such, and that these people being mistreated, that is an issue all the way in the Supreme Court that everyone should be paying attention to. This is, you know, massive problem. Workplace racism, black people being mistreated on the job. And particularly in position to do something to solve this problem. Like, I think we've talked about a number of these different court cases and laws and things that have passed on a regular basis, focusing attention on LGBTQ issues and solving problems, not just doing a lot of finger wringing and crying that things are bad, but moving to solve problems so that they do not have to complain about how they are treated poorly in the workplace. Incidentally, if folks have, if you would like to share on that, if you in your work experience have seen where any individuals LGBTQ are mistreated in the workplace, if you have been in a work environment and seen where they have not been promoted, things of that nature, would definitely appreciate hearing that perspective or hearing how changes in legislation and what have you, if you're having any sort of workshops on what they might call being sensitive to these types of issues. I think we might have talked about what pronouns are going to be used in the workplace. If you've had experience with that in the workplace as well, definitely dial in, let us know. But I did think that that was significant from this week with the amount of time and attention that we focus on workplace racism. Again, the email, if you would like to write in, if you have a thought that you would like to share, either on what's been shared on the program or if you have your own situation that you would like to discuss, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We can read your commentary on the air anonymously. Or if you have input on what's been shared, we can just add that as we proceed. But untiljustice@gmail.com, and I will keep an eye out on my email as we proceed. Let's see. First person who wrote in. Let's see. Good afternoon. I was just now reading an article in the New York Daily News of a black county worker that was terrorized by race soldiers on her job of the Multnomah County. I think that's it. Multnomah County. It is a good article and details how these race soldiers tailor the policy of the workplace to further terrorize victims of racism. And it shows a lot of things that the callers on Neutralizing Workplace Racism talk about. Check it out. The person did not send the article, but I guess you can look New York Daily News for a black county worker being terrorized and getting a $100,000 settlement. I would encourage folks to document and to observe. I'm going to find this article and attempt to share. I think I've talked about this before. It's been my observation, and in these types of cases, where a black person or a non-white person, they do get a settlement. Generally, it's after a substantial amount of time to be prepared. Like if you start out any sort of allegation that, hey, if this takes a year, if this takes 2 years, I am going to have the fortitude to see it through, because that's one of the ways that race soldiers practice racism. They use our time and energy, or abuse our time and energy. So you have to be mindful of that. Even if you get a settlement, they will most likely try to make you wait, you know, a good 7 years and hope that you die before they have to, you know, even pay you a nickel of the settlement. let's see. Next person. Okay. Black female listener. She writes in, as I continue to study and learn about racism, the more I realize how confused I was, and I get less confused. I realize that my white female room person has more power than my black male supervisor, who is the supervisor of the entire department. My black male supervisor only mistreats me via the order of my white female supervisor or the whites behind the scenes, while this white female mailroom lady can tell my white female manager, who is married to a black male, to mistreat me, and she will. The white mailroom person technically has the lowest title. She likes to pretend she is not friends with my white female manager, as she is always playing victim, as if she ever gets in trouble for not doing her work, which she rarely does. Just pausing here. Very important. I think this happens to a lot of us. And I think sometimes it even gets confused, especially when we're talking in the workplace context. Black people mistreating other black people, or non-white people, period. Mistreating other non-white people is not acceptable. That's not something that, you know, people should be patient about, or you should just tolerate and put up with. I do not advocate that at all. Mistreatment is mistreatment, and we should be about, you know, stopping that as soon as possible, immediately, in the workplace or any place else. That said, what I have said consistently, we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. On the workplace, whites have shown if they don't want to hire Negroes, they don't hire Negroes. So being mindful of that, if you have a black person, even if he has the title of supervisor or manager or whatever it is, she has that position because racists want them to. And as soon as they do not adhere to the racist script, or even if they do and racists just decide we're tired of that nigger, we'll get a new one, that'll be that. And I think a lot of us, myself included, we can get confused about that. Sometimes we can just get frustrated with that non-white person. Like, you know, they're out here cooning and doing all this and mistreating us and talking to us rude and all the rest. System of racism, white supremacy, these things are not happenstance. This is not an accident. If it's non-white people being mistreated directly, indirectly, this is according to what racists wanted. Unfortunate, but that's the conclusion I've come to. Very important to keep that in mind. Keeps us, in my view, keeps us from getting frustrated with other victims of racism who generally don't have a whole lot of power. Continuing with what she wrote in, another thing I realized this week, this white female mailroom person is late every day. When you are late, they take the time from your PTO, meaning the more times you are late, the less PTO you have. The most PTO days we get a year are 28 days, yet this lady is able to take a month off 3 times a year. The rules do not apply to her, only to us blacks, and at this point, there are only 4 blacks left in the entire organization. Also to add, when you are late, you get a pink paper showing an occurrence was forwarded to HR. This white lady has never received the pink paper, yet she's late every day. I guess I would have a question. How do you know that she doesn't get the pink paper? Like, is it an immediate thing? Like when you come in, if you come in late, do they give it to you right then? Or, you know, I just curious as to how you know that they're not ticketing her for being tardy. Continuing, my white male coworkers are obsessed with trying to get a reaction out of me. They are always trying to get me in trouble and often avoid helping me, which in turn hurts black clients. They avoid helping me and avoid helping them. My other issue is that they are always watching and following me. I will make small talk with other black people, but if they see me speaking to a black male, they have an issue. I once came back from the cafeteria and one of my white male coworkers out of nowhere started telling this story of how he went to jail and had to fight so many black crackheads. He also won all those fights. I don't speak to this white male, but he felt the need to tell that story once I sat at my desk. Those pesky black crackheads. Continuing, last, my white female coworker gave me incorrect information to provide to a client, and when my supervisor came after me, I told him it was my white coworker who told me to advise the client. When my white coworker was asked about this, she became the most ignorant, untrained person on the team. Her response was, "I don't know anything about that. The only reason why I asked her for assistance because she has the power to authorize certain things and I don't." End of report. With that last segment, now that can be difficult because in workplace situations, frequently it will be set up so that either the white person is the supervisor or is in some sort of position of authority where you might actually be required. That might be a part of the official protocol, is that you have to go and check in with them or get authorization or get details before you can move forward with an account or client or what have you. So you can only be mindful if racists, if they want to sabotage you, if they even want to fire you, it's nothing you can do about it. If they really want to fire you, system of racism, if they want to sabotage you, they can do it. The best that we can try to do is just to be as mindful. You don't always have time to double and triple check information. You know, that's what a system of racism is, where, hey, they can set things up to where you have to go and ask and get information from people who do not have your best interest at heart. And that happens to a lot of black people in a workplace setting, especially when we don't have proper understanding of racism to begin with. The next one, where she says, she says white male coworkers specifically are obsessed with trying to get some sort of reaction out of her. When you know that, I think we talked about within the last week or so, last month or so, having a ritual when you go into the workplace, and just meaning if you're supposed to be at work at 8 o'clock, you're not like this mailroom lady who comes in tardy every day. If you're scheduled to be there every day at 8 a.m., you get there every day at 7:40 a.m. That way you can take, you know, a good 10 minutes and just sit. If you're in your vehicle, you can sit quietly. You can get your mind together so you can already be visualizing. Okay, white guys are coming in. They're trying to, you know, say all this craziness. Oh, I, you know, did 10 years in jail and, you know, had to fight all 50 crackheads and, you know, all the rest of it. All right. Some of that, I don't need to say anything. Some of that, maybe I just write that down in my workplace journal. Talked about brawling with crackheads in prison today. You know, maybe you have a question that you want to ask. Maybe you don't. And particularly if you're in a work setting where you know, okay, these race soldiers, they're doing things just to agitate me. They're doing things to distract me. They're doing things to upset me, just wasting time again. If that's what you've assessed the situation to be, I would probably lean more towards not responding. even if I have a great question, even if I have, you know, 50 things that I want to say, if I'm thinking that all of this is a racist ruse to waste my time, see if they can get me upset, have me, you know, responding to whatever their foolishness is, maybe I'll just say nothing. Maybe that's the best way to go. I'm not going to, you know, hoot, holler and question nothing. Just go about my, I might not even give them an eyelash blink. Go about my work and see what that does. It's been my experience frequently, especially the racists that are just trying to get a response out of you when you do not respond at all and look as bored as you please, just doing my work and moving along. They will tend to leave you alone. We'll go find some other Negro where, you know, they'll chimp out for us. The other one about being with the pink something. So that's the type of thing. If you can get verification, I don't know what the protocol is in terms of, like I said, if they give out the pink slip right now, but that's the sort of thing that you want comparison. If I come in late one time and that ends up being the linchpin to deny me a promotion or a raise or something else that would be constructive, beneficial to me, and you've got other white people who get to come in late willy-nilly whenever they want without repercussion, that's the sort of thing that you want firm evidence. We're talking about if it's going to be some sort of suit, or, you know, you're making an allegation of wrongdoing, you want as much information as possible, like solid, irrefutable evidence. So yes, if you can get that, whatever, like I said, the process is about those pink slips and you know that she's not getting them for being late, bam, that's something that I would, and I would try and be as detailed as possible. Like if you know the exact days where she's strolling in there at 9:15 and the day starts at 9, bam, date and time. Pam came in at 9:15. Didn't appear like she got a pink slip. Keep all those dates and times, boom, boom, boom. You can pile that sort of thing up, and especially if you can pile it up with other employees where they're not following policy and procedure about what's supposed to happen if you come late, or even allowing employees to come late on a repeated basis. Where a lot of black people, you show up late once or twice, and that could be it. So documenting all of that, document, document, document. And the PTO as well. And to know all of that, you have to be familiar with the policy and procedure. That's the last thing I'll say on that. But she was talking about in her report, this white woman comes in late. The procedure is if you come in late, they dock this from your PTO, which means you won't have the ability to take a full month of vacation off if you have someone who comes in tardy on a regular basis. Know the policy and procedure, and that way you can go and ask questions about this. Is the pink slip being given? Is that the policy? Is there discretion with the pink slip? Maybe that's what it is. And maybe they just don't have that in the policy and procedure, but that's something that you can ask. But you would have to know what the policy is to even be aware that, oh, it looks like they might not be following what's in the employee manual. Maybe I need to double check about this. Policy and procedure. That was something I was thinking about quite a bit today. Policy and procedure. Make sure you've read it in its entirety. Again, you don't have to have it memorized, but if you've read the whole thing through so that you at least are familiar with it, with the entire policy and procedure, and then you can check back as you need an update or a friendly reminder. But I think it just puts you in a much better position on the job. Knowing the rules, that can be helpful for you so that you don't break them, certainly not breaking them unintentionally, and also so that you can observe if we're in a place where they're talking about law and order and we got to go by the rules. Well, are we going by the rules? Are we doing what she said in the email, where we're just using policy and procedure to rebuke the niggers? That happens a lot in workplaces. The number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, if you are not comfortable with the phone line, you can drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com and we can read your commentary on the air. Keep it anonymous if you have, you know, concerns about your voice being recognized. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, non-Clemson grad, one of our folks who was down in the great state of Virginia for the Cal's 10-year anniversary retreat this past February.
Thank you. I hope you are doing your best for a miserable Friday. Let's see. I have quite a couple of small stories and then one big story. So I'll just run down those as quickly as possible. If I'll take it too long, please just go ahead and stop me, of course. I remember calling in about more than a month ago about them doing review of job descriptions and certifications and how mine did not make sense. So here's more to that story. After getting some advice from my mentor about how to handle my work classification situation, I went in with questions, not accusations. And my manager agreed it was incorrect for him to bunch my responsibilities with other planners, and he named a new category. Category for me. This means I'm no longer grouped with principal planners or planners. I'm all by myself as transit planning grants manager. We'll have to see how this affects me in the future. After telling my mentor, he responded, way to get clarity without calamity. Next story. A couple of weeks ago, my wife and I were in Walmart. While there, a white male that appeared to be around 4 years old points and says out loud, look, a black man responded to me. He was with his mother and his older brother, who appeared to be about maybe 6 or 7 years old. Racist child. Next story. Earlier this week, while at work, I passed a black female multiple times in the hallway. Around the third time, she commented, are you walking or stalking me? I responded, I'm just walking. Stalking implies a crime. She responded, you are right. Words matter. Next story. This past week, I decided to work out with a couple of coworkers from work during lunch, one white, the other black. We met up with three other white males from another workplace. After we were done, one of the three white males said I looked like Kevin Hart because of my facial hair, and my hair twisted up and skewed back. I thought to myself, I guess he thinks all niggas look the same. Gus, you've met me and seen me. Do I like Kevin Hart? The next day, the white male who invited me to the Wednesday workout group invited me to the Monday workout group, which includes different guys than Wednesday. He also added that they come up with nicknames for each other. I responded that for now, I'll keep it Wednesday, thinking to myself, I don't want to be in a group where white guys can assign me nicknames. Racist jokes. This past Thursday, I went to an upstate planners meeting, a get-together of all the professional planners in the region. There were four presentations on developing downtowns and small towns and cities, which makes me think of the current book being read in the book study, Sundown Towns. During one of the presentations, the presenter said that his city council is really diverse, which included 7 members, including the one mayor. The members that make the 7-member diverse is the one black male African-American, the one white female, and the white male mayor, who is 37 years old, because they are not all white males. Later on that night, I thought to myself, I need a codified question for this word diversity in the future. And I think I might have come up with one. We'll see how it works in the future. Now that your council is diverse, what are you able to get done now that you were not able to get done before? Diversity con. Yesterday, I had a conversation with my mother and let her know that me and my wife went to the gun range this past weekend. And we got to shoot an assault rifle for the first time, which we thought was pretty cool. And then I talked to my mom about one day going to the gun range for her. My mother said that it's just something that she refuses to do. Even though she grew up in Nigeria, her father, out of all her siblings, even though she had 5 brothers, her father only took her aside and taught her how to shoot. Apparently, her father was a marksman. And for whatever reason, my mom told me that no matter what, if her life depended on it, she would not shoot a gun, which was confusing to me because I remember having a conversation about a year ago where she said that one of the problems with police officers is that people are not shooting back. So I was a little confused by that. Now on to the main story. Me and my wife are doing something called community emergency response team training. It's about how to respond to emergency situations. And it's a 2-month or 8 or 9 week course. And this past Tuesday's course, which my wife could not make because she's out of town, was about terrorism. And all the things that go with that. And I thought it was a very interesting thing. I'm turning to one of the chapters now so I can read some of the things in the chapter because I think they're very useful. Here we go. So first, let's start with the book's definition of terrorism. The unlawful use of force or violence against persons of property to intimidate or coerce a government, the civilian population, or any segment thereof in furtherance of political or social objectives. And some of the examples in the book include the bombing of the World Trade Center, the bombing of the Alfred P. Murray Federal Building in Oklahoma City, the bombing in Atlanta at the Atlanta Olympic Games, and a couple other examples. And while he's going through these examples, I couldn't help but to think of the Turner Diaries, which I just finished reading from the book club. And here were some of the things that were said in that specific class that would just had me like, wow, he really said that out loud. Okay. Keep in mind, this is a white male who is also a cop. So if you see something, no matter how small, report it. Sometimes people choose not to report because they are scared of being called racist or anti-Muslim. Where was Timothy McVeigh hiding that no one noticed he was gathering supplies for a bomb? One of the women in the class responded when the instructor asked, what does a Muslim look like? And she responded, a Muslim with a person with a head wrap. Let's see. This was interesting. What killed the Indians in America? He said the answer was smallpox. My wife thought that was pretty funny when I told her that. Not, you know, white supremacy, but smallpox. Here's another example. There was a man kicking a woman on a bus, and people were watching and recording on their cell phones. What kind of people are we that we do that? This is the instructor I'm quoting again. Let's see. And let's see. Oh, and then two stories of terrorist acts by two white males. One involved a person who shot who set up a bunch of bombs. This was interesting because the instructor referred to the person who set these bombs off as an idiot who didn't know about explosives. And I had to ask him the name of this person in the year, and then I had to look up the story. It's called the Bass School Disaster or the Bass School Massacre. Was a series of violent attacks perpetrated by Andrew Cohey on May 18th, 1927, in Bath Township, Michigan. The attack killed 38 elementary school children and 6 adults, and also injured at least 58 other people. Prior to the time explosives going up at the school building, Cohey had killed his wife and firebombed his farm. Arriving at the site of the school explosion, Cohey died when he detonated explosives concealed in his truck. Andrew Cohey was a 55-year-old old school board treasurer and was angered by increased taxes in his defeat in the spring 1926 election for township clerk. He was thought to have planned his murderous revenge after that public defeat. He had a reputation for difficulty on the school board and his personal dealings. In addition, he was notified that Cohey murdered his wife Neely sometime before May 16th and the morning of May 18, 1927. Let's see, almost specifically, an explosion devastated the north wing of that consolidated school building, killing 36 children and two teachers. Cohey had used the time detonator to detonate hundreds of pounds of dynamite and incendiary pyrrolol, which has secretly planted inside the school over the course of many months as rescuers began working at the school. Apparently, he was planning to blow up the school. And then the last story was another school shooting, which happened in 1953, was the second one that I could find as opposed to 1840. And it said, on November 2nd, 1853, Louisville, Kentucky student Matthew Flownow Ward shot the schoolmaster, William H.G. Butler, as revenge for what Ward thought was excessive punishment of his brother the day before. Butler died and Ward was acquitted. And these were the types of examples that were happening in this workshop that we were doing. Even though, you know, they'll say things like, yeah, when you go outside the country, these other countries do not like Americans. But the examples outside the country or people who are non-white were the people you were supposed to be scared of, even though the instructor admitted that a terrorist could be anyone. And I will end it right there.
Much obliged, non-Clemson grad. Wow, that's let's see. So Kevin Hart, make sure I don't miss that. I've actually seen non-Clemson grad. Does he look like Kevin Hart? I'll have to say no, unfortunately. They do say that all of us niggers look similar, but Kevin Hart and non-Clemson grad could not pass for cousins, I don't think. maybe I haven't seen the latest Kevin Hart flick. Maybe I need to get a second look. That is a great line, clarity without calamity, if I didn't butcher it. Great one. That's what we should be looking for. I think that's a different way of stating the solving problems without creating new problems. Different way of stating it. When I guess you were accused softly of stalking, I immediately thought of Bill Cosby and the man, not Dr. Tommy J. Curry, race, class, genre, and the dilemmas of black manhood, like just walking in a work environment. You can be accused of stalking. She knew, like she recognized. You didn't sound like you, you know, accused her or yelled at her or anything of that nature. And she words are important. As she states, stalking has a criminal intent to it, even a terroristic intent to it. Stalking someone, like, my goodness, what's going on? Bill Cosby, like, what is going on here? Yeah, the working out, that's one, yeah, I would not encourage. I know for some people, some work environments, that might be what, you know, you feel like you have to do, right, in order to get that promotion or just to be able to stay on the job without whites harassing you further or causing you more problems. So I understand that. But generally, I would probably not want to work out with whites. I think that would, something about that whole environment seems like that's what I would expect. Something tacky like that, something trashy like that, being compared to a comedian, or I just can't see any way where that would work out well. Like they would be commenting on your body. Like if you, I feel like if you, you know, have a great, even if you're just in shape, let's just say you're in shape, you're not anything like you work out all the time or anything. Just if you're in shape, I feel like that would end up leading to some comments, something tacky, trashy. If you're not in shape, I feel like it would be the same thing. Like, yeah, I would generally discourage the working out with the coworkers. And then the whole workshop. Wow, that's what's keeping the war on terrorism from being won, that people are afraid of reporting because they are squeamish about being indicted as racist. So they just let the terrorists run free. That's the wow. Like, okay. All right. The Turner Diaries is in the book club aforementioned. Excellent book to read. I hear that get blamed with serious evidence much more frequently than, man, we saw that no good Timothy McVeigh and we were going to say something, but I just didn't want to be indicted as racist. You know, I didn't want people to think that I had something against white people. I don't hear that one too often. I hear people talk about the Turner Diaries almost every time that, oh yeah, read Mr. McDonald's book. Oh yeah. Had a big influence before he went and killed. Anywho, much obliged, non-Clemson grad. Was that your first time doing the workout, I guess, before I shove off? Was that your first time working out with these white folks on the job, or is that a pattern?
All right, so when I first moved to Greenville, where I am right now, one of the white male who I do work with, he's an engineer and I'm a planner, and I when I first moved here and I was meeting people, I did go running with him a couple of times, but then at that point I was just working out, doing my own thing. And then, you know, I see them working out from time to time. They go outside. They run around the downtown area. And I thought to myself, I'll finally take him up on his invite, and it was a very cool workout. And as of right now, I might continue to do it on Wednesdays, but I'm definitely going to avoid the Monday workout because the nickname thing, as I said, I really see that heading towards the direction of racist jokes. It's interesting, too, because the other black male who was the witness at my wedding, I'm not sure how he deals with it, but I have commented before that when I usually talk about, you know, racism with him, he usually turns it into a conversation about what black people have done. And so I won't even bother to even approach him about anything. I'm just going to stop going. I'm like, you know what? I like the work out, but I like to do my own thing, and I'm just going to leave it at that at some point.
Right on. Right on. That also is something to be alert, to really workplace or any other environment. If you try to bring up anything even related to racism with a non-white person and the conversation immediately goes to, you know, how black people are messing or how non-white people in general are messing up and, you know, it's our fault. Right on. No problem. You can shift down and just allow the conversation to go to something else, or don't. No arguing. Minimize conflict. That is very, very common. Racism avoidance disorder. I think we've termed it over the years on the broadcast and other terms, but that is very, very common. Racism comes up and it immediately shifts to blaming the non-white victims. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, either on what you've heard thus far or if you have your own workplace situation to address, lines should be open. Proceed. Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers on the line. I wanted to ask the non-credential grad, did you say that the woman who accused you, or not accused you, but the woman who asked you if you were stalking her, that this was a black woman, or was this a white person?
This was a black female. This particular black female, I know who she is. I know what department she works in. We don't have any issues. I think what happened was sometimes, you know, when you're in a workplace, if you work in a place that has like a bunch of homies and you're constantly crossing each other at random parts of the day, you make some kind of oddball statement in relation to the fact that you keep crossing each other. And that was her statement. That's all.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm gonna get back to that in a minute. I want to say 55%. I mean, if in terms of the numbers that they, the best numbers that they have, or at least that I've found, 55% of so-called crack users are white. That's 20% higher than black people. I also wanted to say that it's been stated on this program a lot of times that white people, you know, they'll touch our hair, they'll touch black people's hair, you know, and they're just practicing racism. When that happens, I think that should be an automatic sexual harassment report, regardless of the gender of the person doing it. And if you don't want to do that, you can, you know, put your hand up and block them. And, you know, if no contact is made to your hair or anything, or to your body, period, you know, you can even still, you know, state that, you know, I don't want to be sexually harassed, so that they can, I guess, be alarmed that I'm not taking this as just you practicing racism or you being insulting or whatever the case. I'm taking this as something very serious and something very, I mean, racism, of course, is very serious, but I'm taking this as something pretty much that would apply to anyone. And anyone can get in trouble for something like this. A lot may not happen if you practice racism, but if you sexually harass me, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, you will be reprimanded. It's interesting that, you know, the non-Clemson grad that he said, you know, what he said, that it just seemed like, I thought that was rational of, you know, the black woman to ask if he was being followed, because I think, excuse me, you know, men and women, if there seems to be these coincidences where we just continue to run into each other, or we continue to keep going in the same direction for a very long time, be it in a car or on foot or whatever the case may be, you do wonder if somebody's following you or whatever the case may be. Men and women wonder that, and sometimes they ask and sometimes they're silent. For me, for the most part, I'm actually silent about it, but I think that. I don't see anything incorrect about that. And there, from what I heard from his story, there was no accusation at all. There was a question, which I thought was, you know, a great way for her to handle it. As far as the race soldier who said what kind of person stands around and records while a woman is being beaten or whatever the case may be, well, a rationally scared person does that. And recording also helps arrest and has also been a deterrent, in violent altercations. And a lot of times people who sit there and they say things like that and they condemn people for recording, they don't have any stories to share about how they, you know, were just this hero and they saved all these people or anyone at all, really. And most likely, I mean, I don't know this, but I would think until, you know, the non-Clemson grad tells us different, that this person that they were talking about, the perpetrator, was probably white. Because what I see a lot of times, because just recently, and I'm almost done, some race soldier attacked a black woman, and he punched her in the face and in the head a lot of times, and something, I can't remember what his name was, he got arrested, and I think they let him go on bail or something. And the conversation went from this race soldier is just a savage to black men are not protecting black women. And it just, when white people do stuff, it's always, there's always a deflection. It's like, but if the person who was doing the attacking, if the attacker was black, that person alone would be blamed. It wouldn't be everybody else's fault that this black person attacked somebody. It wouldn't be the people who were recording and who didn't save the person or whatever the case may be. It would be this black savage sat here and attacked this woman or this man or whatever. But when white people do something, it's always everybody else's fault. We don't I think his name was Andrew or something. We don't have this focus on the actual perpetrator. It's like, no, this white savage is the person who is to blame, and he alone is to blame. Not anybody recording, not anybody who was reasonably scared, not anybody who didn't step in and save her and get killed and all of that. No, just the race soldier. That was it. And I just hope everybody has as great a weekend as they can under conditions of white supremacy. And I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Much obliged. Is that a new concept, Ivy, in terms of your suggestion about for victims, if a racist like comes and grabs your hair, to not just charge them or not charge them with an act of racism, but to say, hey, I've been sexually violated, and to report this as a sexual violation? Is that a new concept that you come up with, or have you heard or aware of someone having used that strategy?
Oh, no, it's just actually something that I thought of recently, and that, I mean, I've been working at home for almost a decade, or maybe a little over a decade at this point. So, you know, I don't really run into those situations anymore, but if I will work on the outside again, I'm sure at some point in my life, depending on how long I live, that I will. But if I do, I want to implement that strategy, and I think that it's just a suggestion that I recently thought of, and something that I think should be implemented even on the street, because, you know, white people, they always like try to touch our hair anywhere that we are, and that should just be stated in any way you can. If you're in a situation where you can report it, absolutely do so. But if you're just on the street, I think you should also just mention that. And I just think that the perpetrator, that they should know that is the way that you are viewing that behavior. I hope that answers your question.
For sure. For sure. That reminds me of the suggestion that was made some time back. It was a listener using the word molest in those instances where whites are touching your hair, what have you, to use that word, because it has the same connotation, a sexual violation in terms of how you want people to, or how you are processing this situation and how you want other people to think about and process the situation. This is a sexual violation. I've been molested. Excellent suggestion.
I was just going to quickly say, I think that's brilliant. I'm in my line. Sorry.
Not a problem. Oh yeah, I
hey,
did. I'm sorry. Who?
I'm sorry. You know, can I respond to what Ivy just said? I think
yes,
there's two of the things that I said. The first one, you asked about, you know, if a female is being, you know, being followed, you know, she asked the question, is she being stalked? I'm not sure we're talking about the same context. She wasn't asking a question. I think she was just making a joke because we kept passing each other in the hallway. And, you know, in the society that we live in, as a black male, what she might perceive as a joke could be a very threat against my life. And that's why I responded the way I did. And like Gus said, the man not. Black males who don't do anything being accused just because they're black males. So I hope that helps you understand the context in which I was trying to explain that story. And then, of course, the second one you said was with the police officer talking about people just videotaping. And, you know, when a situation or some kind of abuse is happening to someone and people are just watching it on their cell phones, there was an article that came out recently that talked about a police chief who was upset that his police officers are getting depressed because people keep filming them, you know, doing, you know, terrorism, and how he was trying to petition society that, hey, stop recording our cops. They're becoming uncomfortable and depressed and blah, blah, blah. And I think that was more about what he was talking about as a juxtaposition to this idea that people shouldn't just be watching stuff unfold on their cell phone and try to do something when something bad is happening.
Right. Okay, thank you for that clarity. I still have the same, I guess you could say, perspective that I shared on both of those issues, but thank you for the clarity. I'll mute my line.
Right on. Much obliged, Ivy, and non-Clemson grad. Context of white supremacy. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I think I was able to locate the report. The listener wrote in. Most of the time, people send articles. I have no shortage of reports that people find all over the world that just, you know, confirm global system, racism, white supremacy. But most of the time, people do not email me about an article and then fail to include the article. Like, they want to see if I'll track it down. But I think I found the report the listener mentioned. Oregon County to pay black worker who complained about Blue Lives Matter flag $100,000 settlement. One thing I do want to say, and the words are important. I'm glad that's been said so many times already this evening. Report. That's the wording that I use deliberately. It's not that I have a grievance. I don't have a gripe. I'm not submitting a complaint. Mr. Fuller has talked about that. All of those words kind of give the connotation as though you are a child and, you know, you're having a little tantrum or your feelings were hurt. You are reporting a violation. You are subversive activity. I have been sexually violated. That's the type of language. This is serious. Blue Lives Matter flag settlement. Okay. County in Oregon has agreed to pay $100,000 settlement to a black employee who claimed her workplace became hostile and racially insensitive after she complained, got it again, about Blue Lives Matter flag that was pinned up in the office. Karamaya Guyan Pledgore, wow, that is the name. I apologize. That is, wow, quite a handle. Decided to sue Multnomah County after months of alleged harassment. The lawsuit claims that the Blue Lives Matter flag demeans the Black Lives Matter movement. A probation officer at the woman's office hung one above his desk in September 2017, and supervisors would not require the man to remove the flag. Now, that's interesting. I would be curious to know what their policy and procedure is, because a lot of workplaces, they have specific regulations where you would not be allowed to have that sort of paraphernalia, that sort of flagrant political paraphernalia. They wouldn't allow that to be posted. So that's interesting that he did that and the supervisors didn't, you know, do anything about it. Let's see. Coworkers disagreed with the woman that it was derogatory. She claimed she was harassed because of her stance and faced discrimination and retaliation, in quotes, during her time working as a corrections technician for the county. Supporters of the Blue Lives Matter flag claim it is meant to honor the sacrifices law enforcement officers make and the work they do, but Guyan Pledgore believes otherwise. A copy of the lawsuit obtained by the Daily News said the Blue Lives Matter movement co-opts the Black Lives Matter movement's slogan and repurposes it to shift focus from black lives to law enforcement, which is a chosen profession, not a racial identity. The Multnomah County Board of Commissioners approved the settlement on Thursday, the Portland Mercury reported. As part of the settlement, Guyon Pledgor had to resign from her job with the county on Friday. The lawsuit claimed that the poor workplace environment led the woman to suffer from stress and health problems. Where have I heard that before? Guyon Pledgor's attorney, Ashley Albies, told the Daily News her client didn't want to file a lawsuit but felt there was no other way to bring attention to the issue and to stop the workplace harassment she was experiencing. And even this was 2017, so this has been 2 years that this has been going. That's what I said. Even, you know, if you do get a settlement, like, man, it could take 2 years, 3 years, and I doubt she has a check. A lot of times they appeal. I mean, it could be a really lengthy process. Like, really be honest with yourself about that, that it is not going to be something where it's, you know, 2 months likely. It's very likely that it's not going to be something where it's 2 months. Okay, problem solved. We, you know, got resolution and moved on to something else. It's very, very unlikely that that's going to be the case. It could be 2 years, 3 years. That is, you know, regular. This is even more interesting. I'm kind of actually very surprised in this case that getting the context that just someone having a Blue Lives Matter flag posted in the workplace was enough to, or she said there was discrimination. I guess we didn't get all the details, but she said she faced retaliation, quote unquote, and discrimination, quote unquote, as a result of voicing her disapproval of this flag being posted. But I'm kind of surprised that she was able to get a victory on this one. This would seem like a really difficult case to win. I guess I'll ask that question. Do we have any listeners where coworkers have any sort of paraphernalia of this sort posted in the workplace? Blue Lives Matter flag, Confederate paraphernalia, anything of that nature that would be MAGA, I guess that would count. Anything of that nature posted in a conspicuous manner in the workplace? Because I feel like I've been in quite a few work environments where they have things that are similar to that. Or I've been in work environments where if someone did have something like that, a Blue Lives Matter flag, that might not be some. I certainly couldn't imagine that being, oh yeah, you're going to win a case or alleging that this is racist and discrimination. I couldn't imagine that. Like I said, I have been in some workplaces where they didn't allow anything. You couldn't post, you know, any politics, none of that stuff, which is great. No problem. But I also, man, that, anyway, if we have any folks who, if you have coworkers who have that sort of, those sort of items in the workplace, let us know if they have policies about whether or not you can have those sort of items in the workplace. If you've said anything to address those items, I do think it's a good idea to photograph. It seems that she did that. They have a photo posted with the image. So take photographs if they have any sort of imagery of this sort in the workplace. And again, I would just come back, same thing I said before. You victims, we should not have any of that sort of stuff in the workplace. Racists will just snoop and take it or whatever the case is. Just have things that you need to do your job. Let's see. Other folks dialed in. If you have comments, questions, if you have your own bit of codification that you think would work well to solve problems without creating new problems, proceed. While folks are spectating, I hope this means that things are going tremendous on the job, which would still mean there should be some strategies, codification to help minimize problems and make sure that you have your raise, you're getting your correct compensation, correct, you know, PTO, all the rest of it. But hope things are working well. If so, invest. Hit the blog racism-notes.blogspot.com, racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button is in the top right corner. You'll also see the link for the Amazon wish list. Listener supported Counter Racist Radio. In addition, we had more folks who wrote in. Kizzy's cousin weekly contributor. She writes in, a couple broadcasts back, the codified software developer reported that she did not congratulate a racist who had been promoted, and she would not be contributing to the cost of any gift. There is a racist female in the team I am in who announced her pregnancy this week. I have not said a word despite all the fussing that has happened in the team. Similar, the codified software developers experience, this racist has been at the center of the terrorism I have been subjected to and would happily see me lose my job. I will not be asking her about her pregnancy or making any comments about it. Most certainly not contributing to a gift. I don't care if she is carrying the Messiah. Dramatic. Summary of racist activity for the week. And they will pressure you. I will say that before, you know, continuing. They will pressure you. Be prepared for that. That's why I said that I think that ritual can be really important. If getting to work, again, if you're supposed to be at work at 7:30 a.m., that means you get to work at 7:10 a.m. So you can take, you know, 10 minutes. If you don't drive to work, if you walk, it's warm. Now, I said that earlier, for a lot of people, a lot of parts of the world, it's warm enough that you should be able to stroll. If you walk to work, you can find a park or just a relatively quiet area, a bench where you can just sit safely and collect your thoughts, take some deep breaths, think about things that could happen. But if that's one, I know they're going to be pestering me. Race soldier is pregnant and they want to get, you know, get her something for the baby shower or whatever it is. No. And you can already plan that out. You can just see yourself. No. Come on. What's wrong with you? No. I think codified software developer, when she gave her no, it was no. And I'm not going to give a whole lot of explaining with it. I'm not going to talk to you for 5 minutes about, you know, how I'm broke and I got family members in the hospital and I got to repair my roof. I'm not going to even give you any, you know, explaining. No. Going back to work, getting back on the computer and doing what you got to do, which is brilliant. But again, I think for a lot of people, when they come and get, hey, what do you mean? She's pregnant. We're a family. Come on now. What's wrong with you? We're all just going to pitch in $10. You got $10. What's wrong? They'll do that. They'll try and guilt you and make you feel bad the same way. Black self-respect. That's what it's going to be. That no, no thanks. And with no explanation. I love it. If you want to add on anything, hey, I got family members that I got to take care of. I didn't even get that raise. Matter of fact, what about that raise? If my salary went up a little bit, I might, you know, be willing to reconsider. Are we going to have a discussion about and get back in the question lane? Get back to Kizzy's report. Number one, I previously reported how a racist male attempted to position himself in the center of the panel table at an event, even though I am the lead for the project, and I ensured I sat in the seat when he got up to get coffee. Welsing moment. We organized two more events since then. At the first one, I arrived later than planned due to travel problems, but still on time. I had left him to liaise with the hospitality team at the company we work, as I was busy on other projects that week. It is standard for them to put two tables together for events that have panels, which allows for at least four people to be seated. When I arrived, there was only one table, which meant only two people could be seated, even though there would be three people speaking, including me and the racist male. The other person was my manager, who had arrived shortly before me. They had conspired to ensure I could not sit at the front, despite the fact that the organizations invited to the event are involved in a project I manage. I took a seat on the panel table for the start of the meeting. My racist manager and the racist male whispered to each other. Even though I couldn't hear, I knew it was about me sitting at the front. The racist male took the other seat, which meant my manager had to stand. I asked her if she wanted to sit, knowing she would say no. Once I had finished delivering my content, I sat on another table. I had made my point. Number two, I was in a meeting with said racist male and my racist manager today. We were discussing a campaign that will run over the summer and involves the organizations who are part of the project I manage. I had made clear that the planning for the summer project should have started months ago to avoid problems with date clashes. Let me tell you about starting late planning for summer events. Continuing, my advice was not heeded, or at least racists will never admit to this, which has led to the inevitable. As racists rarely get penalized for their mistakes, there was no need to make an issue of the point. However, actually, I'm going to pause right there. Sometimes that is important in the workplace, recognizing you don't necessarily want to emphasize every act of racism, white supremacy, or even every violation of policy, having some discretion about when you choose. Sometimes you just want a catalog because these can be presented later. If you have documentation, you can bring up, you know, that there were violations, you know, on December 2nd, 2018. You know, I'm aware that it's almost May, but, you know, we got the documented evidence that this has been an ongoing problem. So document doesn't mean you have to bring it up right then. As racists rarely get penalized for their mistakes, there was no need to make an issue of the point. However, the racist male attempted to character assassinate a non-white female, stating that she is problematic and scatty. I don't even know what that means, because the date for an event she is organizing had not been finalized. I reminded him that the non-white female had provided a date and that he had asked her to change it, which she did, and he had then asked her to make alternative arrangements because the second date clashed with another event, a clash caused by his poor planning. He tried to skirt over those facts. My manager had already acknowledged the non-white female's excellence in our pre-meeting. The racist male was not present, so she actually contradicted his comment about the non-white female being scatty. Attempt to blame a nigger. New hashtag. Love it. That is an act of black self-respect, in my opinion. When you can speak up in the workplace, when you can see that things are being done, things are being said in an incorrect manner to harm another non-white person, having the black self-respect, this is speaking up not for me. I am not being harmed, but I see incorrect things are happening to another non-white person, and I'm going to do the best that I can to stop that just by using words, asking questions. That is black self-respect. And in my view, it should make absolutely no difference if you think that that victim that they're trying to harm, if you think that they would do the same thing for you. It should make absolutely no difference if you're there and you're a little bit less confused about racism, white supremacy. Man, that is an opportunity to exercise black self-respect and counter racism at the same time. Continuing. Number three, a non-white male who is a director at another organization has not responded to requests for his project dates or attended any of the events we have delivered. I am not concerned by this, as people, white and non-white, have taken holidays over the Easter period, which is the likely reason for the non-white male's lack of response. There are also other organizations who have not provided their dates. Despite this fact, the racist male stated he would be contacting the non-white male's boss again. I am the project lead. I told him to leave it with me and that I will contact the non-white male. Trifling and terroristic, to be expected. Much obliged, Kizzy's cousin. I think that would be two examples of black self-respect, because it seemed they were trying to mistreat the non-white male and intervening there. So looks like you might, depending on how many non-white people you work with or involved with on the job, you might get many opportunities to exercise black self-respect, to help out other non-white people, keep them from being harmed. That can be an aspect of counter-racism in the workplace, is not just keeping yourself from getting harmed, trying to keep other non-white people from being harmed as best you can from a weak position, and doing so, same thing we said from the beginning, without creating any new problems. But bravo to Kizzy's cousin. I think that's really important about the seating as well. And I think that's another illustration of black self-respect or placement. If you're supposed to be in charge, put that in quote, well, then be in charge. Go along with the act all the way. play the part, sit up front, be at the podium, lead the ceremony, and make sure that folks know that you are the one who is presiding. I am in charge. Yes. Yes. and continue with that, because they will do a variety of things to usurp a black person who is in a position of authority in the workplace. So be prepared. And then a lot of times they'll try and come and use that against you when it's promotion time to say that you're not assertive and you don't take charge and that sort of, I was going to say nonsense, but racism. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, all of the other callers. As I would say, probably most people would know, that we are in the midst of the annual hiring of professional football players, the National Football League to be exact. All of these future employees, all of them won't become employed. Some of them would actually get fired, but all of the ones that they are hiring at this point in time were in college. And I'm going to give one that basically I think was a constructive example. The Dolphins' first-round pick, black male. I can't think of his name because I'm not really watching it for football standpoint. I watch it from the standpoint of from a political point of view. To see how the quote unquote NFL relates to the black males when they describe their quote unquote family backgrounds. For the most part, it's been horrendous as far as the descriptions. I do see now recently that I can't think of her name. She had she's a breast cancer survivor. And she has the morning news program. Her younger sister was a basketball star. I can't think of her name. Anyway, this lady is the person that would interview the player, and she's been pretty constructive in how she would interview the player. Basically the stories are now most of the black males that I've seen who were getting hired, the father was emphasized as being an instrumental in their success, which in the past I've never heard it before, at all, let alone talking about here at one. It was one particular year where it didn't come up at all. And I'm just saying, if she has something to do with it, then kudos to her. I just can't think of her name.
Robin Roberts?
She had, yes. Because I noticed when they would come off of the stage, they would go to her and she would do this interview. And primarily they would run a story about a brief story, something like 5 minutes long, about a biography of the person. And I suspect that she may have something to do with it. And if she did, for the most part, from what I saw, they were pretty constructive as far as, like I said, recognizing family members, recognizing a father who was instrumental in their success. What's unique about the Dolphins' first pick is he didn't waste his time while he was in college, which is a workplace, as you know, as everybody knows. He didn't waste his time. He actually got his diploma within 2 years, which is very, very, it's difficult for a quote unquote student who does not participate in any extracurricular sport or anything like that. So it's actually doubly tough for a collegiate athlete, especially the big sports like football, because they purposely, they mean the staff, coaching staff, take up most of your time, and they limit your means to schedule classes. And so how he got to get his diploma within 2 years, you know, I would like to hear that story, but he did, you know, and so I think that's pretty constructive, because all through most of my years in coaching, that's something that I emphasize. I didn't emphasize anything like professional football. If you're good enough, you don't need me to be encouraging you anyway. But the whole idea was to be able to take advantage, because you are paying for it with your athletic talents. If no such thing as a quote-unquote free ride, that's one of the metaphors that has been quite popular for a long number of years, too long for me. But you actually are paying for it, you know, through, you know, your hard work as far as talents and why, but you still got to work real hard in order to keep them up, in order to compete. And from there, you're able to go to your classes, and come out on the other end with, as Mr. Fuller says, learned something, and also at the standpoint of getting a diploma, and he accomplished that. And as I mentioned before, there were several others, and I'm talking about the first round. These are the ones who, I guess, the NFL looks at the top performing players. And there was a story connected where, you know, with as far as family members, and specifically, as I mentioned, as normally is left out, the father was actually included. And not only included, the player himself would state that it was my dad who played an instrumental part of me being successful. In this guy's case, I think he also mentions about his grandfather also. That's just my report on as far as workplace racism, as far as that concern. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. I will give out the number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. They passed legislation this week, California and New York, I believe, as well, that is supposed to prohibit employers from mistreating black employees because of their hair. If they have natural hair or any other black hairstyles, they're not supposed to be mistreated. Locks, things of that nature, not supposed to be any restrictions against that or any threats to terminate their employment or restrict their hours. I think in California and New York, both passed legislation relating to black hair for employees. If folks in those areas in particular have seen this legislation, if you think that will make a constructive impact for black people on the job, you can, you know, share a thought or two as well. Other folks who dialed in, if we missed you totally, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hello. Hey, Gus. This is Jay in St. Louis.
Greetings, sir.
I have some things to report. Greetings. I was looking for some counter-racist strategies. So I'll try to be brief and concise and explain the situation. Recently, I've been hired on a new plantation. At this place I'm working, while I was being recruited, I know this is you know, whites are very deceptive, and this is a common theme. The recruiter for the agency intimated to me that the salary was going to be a certain amount, $60,000 to be exact. After 2 years on the job, I mean, after 2 weeks on the job, it was communicated to me that the salary is actually half of that. And I am very, I don't like it at all. I've went through a lot of things, kind of structured my future plans around this job being a certain, paying me a certain amount. And I didn't find out until after I started that I'm actually going to be paid half of that. And in order to be paid more, I'm going to have to go to a white supervisor and be rigorously judged, counseled, and approved every step of the way. And I won't actually get paid the amount they told me I would get paid until the seventh year, if everything goes according to the plan and the mind of the white supervisor. So I was wondering some different, if you all had any counter-racist strategies for this job. I definitely want to do the least amount of work as possible. And I don't plan on keeping the job. I'm not going to tell them that. But I was just, you know, wondering if you had seen this before and if you had any advice to share.
Wow. Thankfully, I have not seen that before, although I am not surprised. That is pretty gargantuan. I mean, 60,000 and then, oh, no, whoops, after you've signed and everything. Oh, no. It's going to be half of that. Yeah, I mean, even if it had been, you know, 20,000 to be like, oh, no. It's going to be half of that. Yeah, don't know where right. You got that from. That's documentation. And that's why I think even with I've said before you accept the job and do all the signing and everything, to go through the mm-hmm. policy and procedure in detail, if it's with salary, to have that in writing, so that these type of things don't happen, because even though I haven't heard of a situation like this before, I have had experience with, and even on the call here, many, many victims of racism where foul things happen with their compensation on a regular basis, about, you know, what they were told they were going to get or raise that they were supposed to get and that sort of thing. And then it not being that exactly, or taking long, just lots of different things that always work out to the disadvantage of the non-white person, the black person. So if you have documentation of what the original salary, 60,000 or whatever, is supposed to be, if you have documentation of what that's supposed to be, that would be great to start with, and just asking questions and even where that came from. And really, I would try and shift the emphasis away from having to prove that, you know, I'm worthy of being paid this, to this is what I was told I was supposed to be making to begin with. This is the salary. This is the understanding that I accepted this position with, not a, you know, maybe we'll refigure. I mean, you know, they certainly are in position of power. So you answer whatever questions and, you know, whatever they ask in the process. But I mean, I would really, with that documentation, as much as possible, be asking questions about, and who was the person that even offered, are you talking to the same person who offered that original salary? Probably not.
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because so as soon as I found out this information, I was highly upset. I went back to the recruiter, the person who recruited me in. I emailed them. I was emailing this person for over a year before I started this position. This position has been promoted to multiple people, so I know I wasn't the only one told that was going to be the pay. So what I did was I emailed the recruiter, because I found out the same day, that afternoon, that he was up at the same place offering the same job for the same amount of money, saying that there was another job open for that amount of pay that I qualify for. So I email him and I say, hey, Steven, I hear there's a job open. I thought that was the job I applied for the first time. Is there a way I can apply for the job that actually pays what we discussed earlier? I email him at 6 p.m. in the evening. I report to work at 7 a.m. the next morning. By 7:30, I'm having a conversation with my immediate supervisor. She proceeds to let me know that the recruiter forwarded her the email I sent him. Never responded to me at all. Still hasn't responded to me to this day. And told her that I was looking for another position. And then she went ahead and told me that I could apply for another position. And I also think she practiced racism on me while she was doing this. She also said that the new job that actually pays what I told what I was told I was going to be paid at first might have some sort of cognitive assessment or test. And she just wanted to let me know that because it's not going to be like this job where you just interview and start. And so in so many words, she was pretty much telling me you should be lucky to have this one. But go ahead and apply. You're more than welcome. And I felt like it was very disrespectful to be having that kind of conversation with my immediate supervisor, a person who I never emailed, whose name was never in an email, and who it's frankly just none of their business whether I'm on the job hunt or not. That's how I personally felt. But we ended up having that conversation. So I attempted to get in contact with the original person. I was unable to contact them.
Very, very tacky. Yeah, if I had documentation, I would definitely want to make that a point of emphasis, answer their questions. They certainly are in a position of power. Same thing I say when you get stopped by the police. It's not like you're going into this dialogue with an army behind you to demand your $60,000 salary. So, you know, your composure will be important there as well. But I mean, why? Because, I mean, that's just such a... What a way. I mean, that would be like, you already said that this is not a place, if I heard correctly, this is not a position that you were looking to hold for like the next decade. But I mean, wow, if that was not my thinking originally, it would certainly be my thinking now. I mean, even if I got the money, like let's say you go in and talk to this person, you know, whenever and you get the $60,000, like, wow, to even have to go through that process, like, man, I would be thinking... just in a very different, I would have a much higher level of suspicion with all of the people that I worked with. I would be very intense about documenting, checking policy and procedure, because I would just feel like, wow, there is not a whole lot of trust here. Like, I have to be on a high alert here. Did any of the folks who dialed in, do you all have any suggestions, questions you might ask or recommendations for this meeting where they have practiced a really vile form of racism to make a promise that the salary is going to be $60,000 and then, oh no, it's going to be half of that. And so now we'll have to have a meeting and maybe we'll see about giving you the rest of your cornbread. Anybody have any suggestions, questions that they might ask?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I would say it's based on the deception on their part. It certainly wouldn't take much effort to be able to at least ask or request for a direct meeting on the subject. You know, if all of his information is completely accurate, that they did offer X amount of money and now it became half amount, no question about it, then, you know, you can ask direct questions, you know, whenever that meeting is set up, because of the upfront was very much direct. You know, I mean, in other words, I have one paper in my left hand that says that the job was offering $60,000 and this is what I'm getting. And the question would be why? You know, and as Mr. Fuller says, don't help them with the answer.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Any other folks, suggestions, questions They might ask in the situation where the salary has been switched up. Might ask, has this happened before where someone has been recruited, hired to a job where they were given an initial offer and then once they got the job, the salary was reported as an error or something half of what they were originally offered? Have they had these sort of problems, discrepancies in expected rate of pay before?
I got something to say about that.
Yes, sir.
Can I be here?
Yes, sir. Non-Clemson grad.
First thing I would wonder is that when you apply for the job, do you have any documentation that said that the job that you initially paid for said that it was going to pay $60,000? Like, for example, did it say from a certain amount to $60,000, that kind of thing? Because something similar did happen to me when I first got into my current position as well, too, where, you know, when I wanted the job, it was filled. And then the person didn't show up to the job, and then I was moved from a different position in the same organization, but I wasn't allowed to take on that pay at which it was initially advertised. And one of the things I regretted was that I never made a copy of the original application which showed the amount that was being offered for the position. And I would recommend to anyone who ever applies for the job or for any job who ever planned on applying for, the first thing you should do is that you should download a copy of the application so you have a reference for how much and what is being how much should be you're going to be paid if you take the job and what's being asked of you if you would take on the job, because I learned, unfortunately, the hard way. It's been years to understand this until something happened recently, that this kind of thing probably happens often. You just seem to be a very extreme case of it. And I'll leave it at that.
In response to that, I'll just let everyone know. So the recruiter, this was all word of mouth when we were talking about the salary with the recruiter. I met with him in person a couple of times as well. I forwarded him my resume. He did the work in getting me connected with HR. And so when they emailed me, it was for a particular position that paid half of that amount. But when I went into interview, I asked specifically about the $60,000 salary. And when they talked to me about it, they told me that their agency could only hire people temporarily at that particular pay rate at that time. And 2 months later, this was word of their words, 2 months later, I will be converted from a temporary employee to a permanent employee. Into a different position. And I did not ask what that different position was, and I did not make them specify what the salary of that was. I assumed that it was going to be the salary I had talked to HR and the recruiter about. It was only until the end of the second week that I found out the career ladder, even after being converted, does not include the salary that I discussed for over a year with the recruiter who I actually gave my resume to and had introduced me to the agency.
Much obliged for the extra details. And for a year, I mean, that's such a long time to go through any sort of process, employment or elsewise. But I mean, for that much talking and information and all the vetting, going through all this, references and all the rest of it. And wow, I guess one thing, all of us still learning, I would definitely get it in writing. Wow, this sort of thing happens on a regular basis in the workplace. That part of it, I can say, unfortunately, I am very familiar with where something gets said verbally about anything, employment, vacation days, sick leave, anything. And then when time comes, it wasn't written down and I don't remember it. Who said that? I don't even think that person still works here anymore. Everyone's got amnesia, like very familiar. Anything like that, get it written down. Even if it's in email form. If you talk to such and such person, this is the dollar amount. It was $60,000. Can you confirm? bam, then at least you have an email confirmation where, yes, $60,000, this date, this job, boom, boom, boom. Like, get it written, anything that is important. And I mean, that is the most important thing, I think, if we're talking workplace context, is, you know, how, what am I going to be compensated? That's the whole reason that I'm here. Man, get that written down. I know we said that with sick leave, because the same type of thing has happened with vacation time and such before, where it was verbally approved that, oh, yeah, you can get, you know, the first week of July, get it off, no problem. And then the first week comes and, oh, no, that we don't have any sort of written verification for that. So you'll be in tomorrow, July 1. Like, I regularly get all of that in writing, even if it's just an email. Any other folks have suggestions or recommendations for the meeting, questions that you would ask? Deliberately vague. try to get as much detail as possible in the hiring process when you're starting out at a job. Lots and lots of questions, so that for you, nothing is vague. That's why I say go through that policy and procedure, all of the details, so that there are no or as few surprises as possible for you at a new job. Just so that you don't have situations like this. Everybody likes to make a plan. That was, I think, what you started with, trying to make a plan based on, this is the salary that we discussed. And, you know, I'm trying to plan out what I'm going to be doing, you know, with my life based on that salary. And now I'm finding out that it's half of that. I mean, you know, at minimum, just so that we can all go about setting up a correct plan. I submit the system of racism, white supremacy, they love being able to totally demolish plans that victims of racism have, and or sabotaging our plans where we have got correct information and plan things out. And then they come in, you know, can mess things up some type of way. That happens on a regular basis. Try as best we can to ward that off just by asking lots of questions, getting lots of details, being super informed, as much information as we can in the workplace. Much obliged, Jay in St. Louis. And you others, give us the update when you go and have your discussion. If you're able to think of some questions that work out well or notice some tactics that they use, let us know. That's always helpful. We are still learning too. Other folks who dialed in, if you have questions, comments, your own situation, or anything that has been discussed thus far, lines should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have a few incident reports, observations I'd like to share. The first one is, this is definitely a Wilson moment. A white woman was discussing on, I guess, her weekend plans with someone when I was in the judge's chambers picking up paperwork. And she was basically having a conversation saying that she's going to be doing a 5K run called Muddy Princess. And just by the title alone, I was like, what is that about? And she says that apparently it's this run where they go and run in the mud, her and a bunch of other women. All right. And it's down in Orlando. And I went to the website, and some of the slogans stood out. And one of them was, we face the muddy challenges together. We face the muddy challenges that life throws at us together. And the other one was, don't miss the great opportunity for a quote-unquote girl's dirty day out. So these are actual slogans that are on their website. That was my first one. The next two were two black male customers. The first one was, he was called Creepy by the two black females, and I had a conversation with him, and he said he wanted to be an attorney, I guess some kind of independent attorney. And he said, I don't know if I can do it. I said, no, sure you can. You can. And I wanted to be encouraging. And he said he went back to something that happened to him in third grade, where he stood up and said he wanted to be a lawyer. And he said that people laughed at him. So that, you know, that kind of affected me a little bit. I was like, wow, like, really? So, you know, that was just insightful for him to share that with me. I barely knew him. So, you know, I wanted to share that one. And the next one was, there was a black male who came in with a white woman. I guess they were in a relationship, quote unquote. And it got to a point in the conversation where he asked, he was saying, oh, well, you only have one IT person for both buildings, and y'all need to hire me. And the white woman was like, okay, well, you can just go to human resources and just put in an application and see what they say. And say, yeah, you know, I'm good at IT. I know how to turn off the computer and turn it on. So everybody starts laughing. Like, see, like, it's just, it's comments like that. It's stuff like that that occurs. And I'm not sure if that has to directly deal with racism, but just in terms of the behavior and the brain trashing to seek validation by, I guess, comic relief or whatever, or trying to make some kind of jokes. You know, I guess it kind of gets into that, the man not type of situation, to not seem, I guess, threatening, I guess. My next one was, there was a book that when I went into another judge's office, and I asked what the book that this white woman was reading, and it was Aaron Hernandez, The Rise and Fall of Aaron Hernandez, All-American Murder. and she was like, yeah, you know, this is an interesting book. And, you know, I always knew he was a thug, just like, what did she name another Florida football player? It was a while back when she said this. So that was some of the reading material that I noticed some of them were reading. And there was another football player that I noticed who came in with a white female, because I didn't really recognize them at first, and they were getting a marriage license. So he came back in today. It was Percy Harvin. The white family members came in, and some of the black family members came in. So everybody's taking selfies like, oh my gosh. And I guess being flabbergasted or whatever, and surprise and amazement. So that was a ceremony that occurred. My next one is, there was a conversation that the IT white man and a black female had, and she was going to go witness the ceremony. So he said to her, well, you go in there and make them happy, and then you can come back and make me happy. And she says, okay, I'll be back. So that's all kind of connotations to that. So every time they're making certain comments to each other, they, I guess, are playing on the semantics of the double meanings of what's said. So she's saying, well, whenever you're over here, we got to grab you or whatever. And he says, hey, don't say that. I can take you to the back office, and that can be considered sexual harassment. But yet he's saying that he's even said that he's been approached about sexual harassment, because a female said that he hasn't touched her. So that right there is already totally inappropriate, those kind of conversations. And my last one is, I wasn't a part of the conversation, but I was in the break room, and there was this white female sergeant with the star on her uniform, sheriff. Now, this, you know, ultimate race soldier. So she was having a dialogue with the white man. And, you know, there was having some kind of, I guess, exchange of insults. Because she came up, walked behind them. The context was they started, you know, making insults. And he was saying, hey, don't sneak up on me. You know I've been in a war. And she came, she goes to the vending machine and comes back and says, oh, the only war he was in was with the war of fashion sense. So she made an insult at his attire. So they get into talking. And he makes a suggestion, or he asks a question about his daughter pursuing a career in law enforcement. And as she's responding, he uses the term, she's blonde haired, blue eyed. And she kind of stops and she's like, oh, well, you know, what does that have to do with anything? We hire people based on what their interests are, something like that, and not what their looks are. And she's asking him, well, does she live with you and is she in college? So he says yes. And she starts saying, you know, maybe she should pick up a trade like cooking and being a nurse in the medical field. And I guess these more so female-centered type professions. All right. So, you know, major hypocrite, because she goes on to say, because you don't want to send her our way, you know. And excuse the language, but I want to be explicit just to forewarn what I'm about to say. So she's like, yeah, you don't want to send her our way. You know, you get called a cracker motherfucker and a racist. And there's people around. So the guy who she's talking to, he kind of like sits back in his chair like, whoa, why are they saying all of this? And she's like, yeah, you know, I don't know. You know, they don't even know me. And she names one of the officers that's under her. And she says, well, they might try and say it to Blank, too, because that wouldn't make sense. Why would you call her a racist when she's with a black man? So she's saying all of this hostile, racist, incorrect, inappropriate things. And it's almost like it was staged, not staged, but it was orchestrated to say around me. So I think maybe some more unjust networking was occurring, because this is a sergeant now. This is not the regular security. This is the person who is over the officers saying, oh, you're going to get called a cracker. That's the reason, you know, another white woman shouldn't pursue law enforcement, but she has on a uniform herself. So that was one of the ones I definitely wanted to share. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Much obliged, caller in Florida. Now check that out. Now they just said they used that as an excuse for why some people will not report terrorism. That was what our caller said. They had the meeting, a non-Clemson grad. They don't want to be thought of as a racist. And now we also have that as an excuse. Oh, no, you don't want to be a police officer. They'll call you a cracker, a racist cracker at that. My goodness, you don't want to be a. And she's sporting a star, as was stated. I also think that could have been as well, because you've had white women on your job run experiments. So absent. I mean, they talk all the time. There is a relationship between the court clerks and what have you. They said that even about Ferguson, the court clerks and the prosecuting attorneys and what have you, and enforcement officers. There's a relationship. They hang out together, have lunch together, and all the rest of it. So it would not surprise me at all if there hadn't been a conversation even. And I mean, we've had so many people talk about that, trying to bait you. Maybe we'll get him to say something, go up here and say all this, even stunning other people. What crack? What is she talking about? Maybe he'll say something. Maybe he'll respond. We don't know. That's why I say it's important to maintain your composure. If you don't do that, nothing else matters, because you just never know what's going to. I mean, who goes into work thinking that that's what's going to happen? Enforcement official will be at the front window spraying, you know, her filth and talking in depth about racism. Now, even that is even more suspicious, the fact that she says all this in a really profane manner. But then, like, the details, like, you know, this other white woman, one of her officers or whatever, she's got a black partner sexually suing someone. So she couldn't possibly be a racist. Even, the, I mean, to go into all of that detail, it's conspicuous. Just I'll leave it there. And for this to be happening in a courthouse, too. And like you said before, you stick out. They know we got to watch this one. They move meetings around and stuff. Putting that in context, like, that is super suspicious. The event with the mud, Dr. Welsing all the way. Interestingly enough, I was remembering the term that they use for some white women who are sexually involved with black males is mud shark. Let's see. Other notes I took. So many things at the courthouse. Aaron Hernandez, he's a thug, of course. And even reading a book like that, Mr. Fuller has talked about how the system of white supremacy, it warps everything. And so you can't even tell how distorted things are because the entire environment has been distorted. To have that's casual literature, just reading about a killer, convicted killer who had brain damage from playing football, just violence on top of violence on top of violence, which is what the system of white supremacy requires. Oh, this is great reading. I work a little bit and then I read about this thuggish killer. Love it, love it, love it. That's the mentality. And that these are the same people at the courthouse. What did she say before? She said, man, I love those white women so much. If they killed someone, I would help them cover it up. And then she goes back to reading about the thug. Aaron, I hope this wasn't the same person who said that. But I mean, just that's the environment. Let's see. The black male who came in with the white woman and said he could be the IT guy. He knows how to turn the computer on. I think the system of white supremacy, that's a part of our victimization. I think myself included, many of us, we're confused. Victims, I'm talking about. We're confused. We don't understand white supremacy, racism, and being in fear, too. Being at the courthouse, no less. You got armed whites around and powerful white people who can ruin your life in about 5 seconds. Not knowing how to function around white people, not knowing how to function in that environment. Just, hey, if I can get a few laughs, man, maybe that'll keep me in the good graces of these race soldiers. I think a lot of us, that's about the only logic that we have. White validation and anything that I can do to, you know, keep them from, you know, lynching me or doing whatever to me. Let's see. If I heard that correctly, the black male with all of this, like repartee, verbal repartee with this white female employee, and some of it sounded like it could be sexual, and he is saying that he already, I guess, has been reprimanded or at least questioned about sexual harassment, and this other white female employee overheard this and got upset because he hasn't touched her. Wow. That, I mean, that is super. And again, that I think that's why Mr. Fuller has at the front of the book, if you don't understand racism, everything else will confuse you. Functioning in that manner, just showing you don't understand racism. You do not understand, you know, the danger that you are in with this sort of behavior. Even after we just watched all this with Bill Cosby. I don't know what could be. I mean, I guess some people might say you could say something, but that could be risky, too. Don't emulate that behavior. And even the over here, that's something I hadn't even, I don't know if we, you know, discussed before. He's doing this with another white woman. I guess at least for today, that's okay. They're joking around, whatever. Other people can hear this. She might not report him, at least not today. Maybe she doesn't report him for sexual misconduct. Someone else overhearing that, they might report him, and that could end up being a problem because it could end up being something where they say, well, you know, Margaret and he think that this is funny, but I don't think this is funny, and I don't think this sort of conduct should be encouraged in the workplace. And that could be, yep, me too, exactly right. We don't want to promote this, even though that she thinks it's okay. we're going to put a stop to this right now. And, you know, and I could easily see it being that the black person is the one that ends up being, but we already had, just today, we had black male as creepy, black male as potential stalker. Very, very easy for black males to be accused of all kinds of things. Black people, period. But just today, I'm just going by what we heard. Potential stalker, creepy. Anywho. Yeah, don't participate in all of that. The workplace is super inviting. Just be mindful of that at all times. Other people can hear what you are saying. Whether they got Alexa or not, other people can hear what you are saying. Speak that way all the time. If you need to remind yourself, make that a part of your ritual. Other people are always listening to what you are saying. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Other folks who dialed in, if we missed you at completely, you should go ahead, *61, get a hand up. If you have comments, suggestions on what has been shared thus far, if you have your own situation, proceed. Caller at 7307. Did you have commentary? Not sure. Oh, are you there or are you just listening? I thought I. Hearing lots.
Hello.
Okay. Yes. We heard you, and then I'm not hearing anything. Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Excuse me. This is more of a question.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes, sir. You have a question? Go ahead.
This is more of a question.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, like, when you enter the workplace, like as a new employee, is there a strategy that you could probably employ as far as using, you know, other coworkers to kind of disarm a potentially hostile environment? Because the reason why I'm asking that, I'm sorry, I kind of have a cold, but the reason why I'm asking that is because I really believe that we are strategically attacked, for lack of a better word. I think that I think that it's calculated, and there's probably things that we could do to kind of, you know, counter maybe like someone trying to set something up, if that makes any sense to you. Kind of like chess, and, you know, using other coworkers to assist you with, you know, keeping yourself shielded from encountering a racial situation. Am I making sense? I'm sorry. You kind of got quiet on me, but.
Oh, I was trying to listen.
I just think that we should come up with some sort of strategy, because I feel like I was saying that they're being strategic, and you know, kind of just talk to certain people, see Because here's what I found. I noticed that, like, when your relationship goes sour with your manager, per se, or the person that you're having, a white person that you're having a the relationship has become racist. I noticed that the other workers kind of fall in line and protect and back the manager or side with the manager. And I'm wondering if, you know, like, you could kind of like have some allies or something, if that's possible, you know, to kind of, you know, keep so the manager will kind of have that in mind when they're attacking. Because let me say something else, that I've had some people talk to me or tell me that they've had similar experiences to mine, where when a coworker left, they were doing fine on the job, and then when a coworker that they may have been close to left, then that's when the manager attacked them, so to speak, racially. So there must be something to that, is what I'm trying to come to.
Okay.
Or say.
I understand. I think your question. I certainly advocate anyone, I think, who's listened to this segment specifically, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. I am a enormous advocate of being strategic, coordinating.
Right.
That's what we talk about. Thinking about logically what you want to do, what you want to say in a workplace environment. So
right.
I certainly agree with that. And particularly, you preface this, I think, saying if you're a new employee going into a workplace, are there ways that you can use maybe some of the other people who work there to help protect you from some of the harm that's there? I have certainly recommended trying to assess who the more powerful white people are, if that means going up to the people who have the highest position or whatever it is to help solve problems. That sometimes I have found that can be extremely helpful. Just going in, as opposed to a problem arises and you're talking to the janitor, who might listen to you talk for, you know, an hour, but he doesn't have the ability to solve your problem, as opposed to you can talk to the white person, who in 5 minutes, this problem can be solved and we can move on to whatever else. I'm a big advocate of that. Just talking directly to the person who can solve the problem and explaining it quick. Let's get right to this and hopefully we can do it as soon as possible.
Gus, I don't mean to interrupt you, but What I meant, like, sometimes the most powerful people in an organization can be the most racist.
Absolutely.
So, you know,
that's what you should expect. In
fact. In my mind, I try to stay away from you know, expecting anything from them.
Right, and
that's
why I was, when I was listening to your response and you were talking about some black people, it seems like they get attacked when a certain person leaves and forming relationships.
Right.
That was the word that was used. Now, that is something I do not recommend because of what you just said. If the person is classified as white, I expect them to be racist, whether that means they're the Klan or they call you a nigger, or whether we're cool for 5 years and then you find out later that they didn't tell you certain information, some way, shape, form, or a myriad of ways, I expect them to be racist. So that already, I'm not going to be thinking that this is a quote-unquote relationship or a friendship. All of this is going to be, this is someone I expect to be racist. However, if they can help me solve problems and get constructive information, great. I talk about that all the time. You're not here to be aloof. You're not here to be mum and not speak to people. You can be talking to them and getting constructive information where they can help you learn things on the job. I don't recommend looking for quote unquote allies in a workplace that will, hey, yeah, I will defend true. You. That just to me doesn't seem logical. And I frankly haven't heard very many right. black people who have succeeded in this, getting white friends. If anything, I've heard from people that they thought were their friends who eventually did what you said. They right. practiced racism and they were not there to help. That's what I would expect. What I recommend is policy and procedure, documentation,
okay.
speaking. Okay. These are the strategies that I recommend where it's not based on a relationship, where the thing that you're looking to protect you is, hey, am I in accordance with policy and procedure? If I am, I shouldn't be experiencing a problem. If I am, what's the problem? If I'm doing something wrong, then you all can let me know that. But if I'm not, you know, what's going on here? Let's investigate. Why are these things happening? Which I'm still staying in the question. That's the type of thing that I recommend in terms of strategies, not looking for relationships, white people or even non-white people to help you, defend you on the job. I've had, even if it's a white person that you have rapport with, racism comes down mm-hmm. and you're going to be mistreated. If that person is classified as white, they will show you better than I can tell you what it means to be white and where their allegiance lies. That's what I've seen demonstrated consistently. If folks that are here, if they have experience with being able to cultivate those relationships where if these folks are protectors and defenders of you when racism goes down on the job, that would be, hey, that's brand new codification for me. I would have to mute myself and listen.
Okay. Well, yeah, I understand totally what you meant, but aren't some people more likely to say, you know, be able to kind of say that, well, this guy's doing a really good job, and I'm going to be fair. You know, maybe you can steer the conversation, the problem into, well, this can I inject my work into this kind of to divert the racism and say that, look, you know, this or a white person or not, well, preferably a white person because they have the power, could say, well, you know, their work is so superior that may carry a lot of more weight over the racial issue at hand. That's kind of what I meant. Just someone that is somewhat fair, that maybe, like you said, that when the racial situation goes down, it's just going to be all about race. So,
watch that word fair. We are supposed to be mindful. Words are very important. I do not expect right. white people to be quote unquote fair. I expect
okay.
white yeah. people to practice racism, white supremacy. That's logical if we're in a system of racism, yeah. white supremacy. And I would also submit, just in terms
correct.
Of accuracy of words, the racial situation already exists. The system of white supremacy is the racial situation. I would just say
that's logical.
If you can locate a white person that you think, you know, will advocate for you, you think that they will treat your work in a correct manner and value you as you should be for the work that you expend for the company, great. I would still keep in mind right. that person is a suspected racist, but I mean, if they can be helpful to, that's the same thing I said before.
Correct.
You can find a white person that is more powerful who can be advantageous to you. Outstanding. Again, I haven't found a whole lot of non-white people who have located, you know, quote unquote, white allies in the workplace who hook them up with information
right.
and advocate for them to get promotions and that sort of thing. But absolutely, if you can find that, great. Use it to your advantage as best you can. But I generally would say that seems to be a rare find for victims of racism. Have you found such an individual, sir? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I haven't, but I have found people that were non-white that kind of advocated for me as far as making sure that I got, you know, I'm a developer, web developer, software engineer, you know, kind of wear different hats, but the places I was working, they would were giving me inadequate, equipment, as far as hardware, computers. So they helped me to get the good computer that I needed and just kind of watched out for me. So that kind of helped tremendously, although, like you said, they were not white. It wasn't until that person left. It wasn't until that person left that my manager really became, overtly racist, and started the procedure of getting rid of me. So,
At least
the process.
At least to what I'm hearing, if it's accurate, you said some non-white people stepped in and were helpful in getting you the materials that you needed to do your job well, where it seems that the whites had been concealing the materials that you needed to do your job well and making it difficult for you to get things done. That's the whole premise with this program, why it's set up the way that it is. That's what I expect white people to do. I haven't experienced it personally. I haven't seen any research, and that's not what I hear from people when we speak on a weekly basis on this broadcast, which we've been doing for years. That's what I hear: white people practicing racism, white supremacy. I don't hear people saying, "Hey, yes, these white people on the job are racist." However, Judy has been a real gem. She has given me, I just do not hear that. If you all can find a Judy or a Ralph or a Sam, hey, that is a find. Use that person and as much as possible and see if you can get as much information as you can. Maybe that would be a white person that you go do that workout with that non-Clemson grad talked about. Maybe.
Right.
But until then, no.
Right.
Stick to the code. The strategy that I suggest is expect them to hide, to sabotage, to spy, to practice racism. That's what I suggest, and to be on your, and I still don't say to be mum around them and don't speak. I still say, hey, be cordial, be courteous, but you are asking questions.
Okay.
You are mindful about what you say. You're not surprised if they practice racism, white supremacy. And you are aware of policy and procedure in the workplace and are mindful of that all the time, because they generally do not practice policy and procedure as much as they go down with a vengeance on non-white people for allegedly committing some infraction against their rules.
Exactly.
Gus,
if I could just go back to the caller before,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, the one that was before the last one. He mentioned something about he went on an interview, and the prospective employer went behind his back and sent an email to his current employer. And we didn't really discuss much about that, but is that legal?
An employer sending an
email? I'm sorry, let me re-explain it. He went on an interview with a prospective employer, and then that prospective employer went behind his back and sent an email to his current employer that he had been on an interview. And I thought, that's a part of what someone has been recommending to me, to always interview at least, maybe quarterly. Per year, every 3 months. And so that's what I asked her. What if the person that you're interviewing with goes behind your back and tells the employer, your current employer, that you're out interviewing? And because I've always felt like they were not very receptive of that. And so in his case, he said that he knew she told him that this other prospective employer had done that, and I was wondering, is that a legal issue, or is that okay for them to do that? Or
I'm not aware of there being any law against it. I mean, if you go out to do an interview, technically they could contact a previous employer or even a current employer just to get information about your status and to see if you're someone that they want to hire. So I'm not sure if there's any or I don't think there's any legal recourse. I may be misinformed about that, but I know we've had callers who have talked about that being a concern that they have going out while they're employed and going out and doing interviews. Unjust networking, I think, the caller in Florida, the term that he made up. That happens on a regular basis, formally or informally. It could just be something as simple as, you know, as I said, sometimes racist sabotage, black people trying to get employment. It could just be that they're trying to check to see, you know, that you're employed. But certainly that's something that folks have talked about and having concerns about. And even, I think, codified software developer, she can get a second reference. I think she had said, because she was on a job and I think she had done some interviewing, and she said that she felt, based on some of the things that her coworkers were saying, that they knew she was kind of shopping around to see if there were other opportunities. She got that sense. So unjust networking, white people talk about us all the time. It's best to just think you're not going to have very many secrets. If white people want to know what you're up to, they have lots of ways to find out. So that's what system of white supremacy means too. Did any of the other folks that are with us, did you all have any thoughts about trying to secure a white ally in the workplace, and or the if you're going to get ratted out if you try to go interview for a new job? Did folks have any thoughts on either of those two subjects?
I had a question for the caller.
That is Ivy.
Sure.
Sir, are you a white person?
I hear that all the time. So, no. But I, you know, like I said, I hear all the time that I sound white, and but no, I'm black. So
thank you for asking.
I wish I had a more articulate response to that, but yeah.
Did you say something else, Ivy? I didn't hear. Did you just say you were muting your line, or were you satisfied?
Yeah, I just, I didn't say that he sound white, but I just wanted to know based off of some of the things that he was saying and even some of the things that he was doing. So, thank you for answering my question. I'll mute my line. Yeah, that's all I said, Gus. I'll mute my line.
Right on.
Okay, thank you.
Did any other folks have questions on those specific topics about if you're on a job, you go to interview on a different job, or getting a so-called white ally where you have a relationship with this person and they will be helpful to you in the workplace? Did any other folks have thoughts on those two issues?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
When it comes to, well, at least in my experience, when it comes to looking for another job, I usually try to just keep mum's the word, use references that have nothing to do with the people that I work with, and try to keep my network, you know, separated, at least 2 or 3 degrees of separation. Because, you know, I do agree with the idea that if you're going to apply for another job, it's not your employer's business. Right. That is doing what you're supposed to do when you feel like you want another job or you want to get paid more at another place or whatever the reason might be. I do have a question for related to what Ivy asked as well too. Like, I remember, for example, like when I was growing up like, you know, if I was doing my work and stuff, I got accused of being white as well too. So, but you know, we're on the internet.
Yeah.
We're on an internet call, though, so, you know, the context is a little different because, you know, no one probably knows what you look like. You also said just now that, you know, people always, you know, sometimes assume that you're not a not white person. So what do you think that you might be doing that people might assume that you are not a black person?
I think it's more the way I talk. Because I don't think I've said anything, because I'm very well versed in studying Dr. Frances Chris Welsing, and I've listened to her videos over and over and over again. Same thing with Neely Fuller, And I recall him saying in one video that the only way that you can prove something is if you have a white person to back you up. So it was more. So yeah, but I'm thinking I don't think it's because of. Well, it could be because I said something that sounded like I don't really understand the system of racism, white supremacy. I don't know. I hope that answers your question, Emma. I'm sorry.
Non-Clemson grad, did that answer you?
It did not answer my question at all. I'm not going to cast any aspersions, but I personally do see why Ivy did just ask her question, because it's not necessarily because, like you said yourself, you know, people think because of the way you sound that you might be white, but it's more than that. It's your overall vernacular and the way you choose your words. It doesn't make any sense for a black person to speak the way you're talking. Even a self-identified black person, I'm sorry, even a white-identified black person does not have your particular vernacular. It's little things like when you're talking about racial situations, most black people in this kind of situation, they act in two ways. If a black person is engaged in a conversation in racism and they don't want to be there, they'll immediately change the subject and maybe even try to leave the conversation. Or they'll be very short with their language and just straight out say racist or something along those lines. And those aren't your, and those, you know, your word, your patterns of speech isn't following those lines that usual black people might use when talking about racism. And that's why I think Ivy asked her question. Now, I could be wrong. I have no idea what you look like, but I do understand why she asked the question along those lines, and I'll leave my line.
Much obliged. This is Workplace Racism. Okay. And hang on a second, sir. We are on an internet program, and since I don't have video for anyone here, well, we already did our Kevin Hart thing. So I have seen non-Clemson grad, but with the exception for him today, I have not seen anybody that's here, and no one here has seen me. So with the exception of non-Clemson grad, there's no verification for anyone here. And this has happened before. In fact, it happened in the book club with Mel. She did the reading for Asada, and we had a number of people who accused her of being a white, or at least sounding like she could be a white person. I think Ivy, she just asked the question. She didn't accuse or anything. She just asked the question. But be that as it may, that has happened before on the program numerous times. That is not what the segment is. So anybody that thinks our caller is a white person, bravo, use your brain computer. That is not why we are here, though. And that is another reason why you're still supposed to follow logic, because certainly that could happen where you have a race soldier who is giving recommendations for what to do to solve the problem, and you still do the same thing. Follow logic. You also might have victims of racism who give out bad information. You do the same thing. You follow logic to evaluate and make sense. I think that's why Mr. Fuller recommends that repeatedly. Follow logic. Follow logic.
Correct.
Yeah. Do we have any other folks who had comments, questions beyond whether or not said caller is a white person?
Can I be heard?
Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I just wanted to ask on the white ally, I guess, question. Has there been any white people on the job that has opposed racist behavior by other white employees in your presence?
Oh, is that a question for me?
Yes, sir.
You know what? In a work environment, it's never happened. And that's the thing about it. I think in discussing this, I'm sure everybody's aware of this, but I just wanted to kind of reiterate, because I find myself reminding people of this, that, you know, it's like that's even more of a battlefield than, you know, when you go into work, a workplace, you are at war, even more so than before we got there. So to answer your question, I have never, ever heard that at work. But the reason why I asked that is because I was thinking maybe I could try harder at, because what had happened is I was at a job for so long, and I left there with zero references, and I realized that is very wrong, you know, that I can't. Not only did this manager sever my relationship with the company, but he severed my relationship with my coworkers, because I'm black and they're white. So that's another, you know, price that it seems like we have to pay. But I was kind of like second guessing myself and thinking maybe I should try to forge some friendships as best as I could. You know, where I'm at, it's very, very racist. So, I know it's everywhere today, but I mean, it's did that kind of answer. If we could, you know, I'm curious as to why you asked that question. That might be of constructive value to me.
I had asked it, and you did answer. I was asking that because, in terms of, at least in my opinion, like, if there's going to be maybe not even an ally, but just a white person who is in opposition to white supremacist conduct on the job, you would think that logically they would speak out or put forth some effort in what they say and do to white people who are saying and do things that racists do.
Yeah. That's pretty sad that, you know, but, you know, like I said, my experience has been you walk in there and they're fired up for that situation. And it's like they come to work to practice it, because, you know, that's where you spend most of your time, people that work. So, back to your question, it was like, I'm thinking that you could at least find one. At least one.
You know, let's hold on a second, sir, because we have some people who haven't participated, so maybe they will
have that fine. One. Cool.
Let's see. Cool. Irie in Louisiana, did you have commentary that you wanted to share?
Yes, hi. Just so you know, Gus, I'm sorry. Hi, everyone on the line. And just so you know, Gus, a couple times I had to call in again because it wasn't, I don't think it was alerting me that I was on the line. Just so you know about that little technical glitch.
You're saying you called in and like you put your hand up to speak and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It just showed you just popped up on the scene. It has the time marker next to when you called in. Like, it shows that you've been on for like 3 minutes. So, and I was looking at the switchboard, so I didn't see you. So yeah, it could be more interference. Glad you were persistent.
Oh, it's all good. Thank you. I'm not sure. I joined like maybe 15 minutes ago, even though I couldn't speak right away, but somebody had said something about getting a favorable recommendation from a white person. I feel like a book, I've probably said this a lot, but I'll say it again because I really feel it's constructive. 48 Laws of Power is something that you have to consider if you follow that when it comes to white people, unfortunately, especially if you're going to need something from them. And I do believe law number one is never outshine the master. So you're going to have to be critical of yourself and think, have I pissed off someone that would be considered a superior advisor, like Mr. Fuller would call it. And if you do have someone in mind that you haven't for sure, and you've also done what they say in the 48 laws is help them basically look good. So you've done work for them and they've been able to take the credit. If you have like those, at least those two criteria met, I think then, you know, you probably have a good chance of getting some type of positive recommendation, not glowing or, well, that's a metaphor, not, you know, something superfluous, but something that'll aid whatever you're trying to do. So that's the first thing I wanted to share. And perhaps that's a book club thing later on, because I think it's a part of their codification. So there's that, Gus. But the other thing I want to share, and I'll make it fast, workplace racism for me, along with the stuff I reported on Saturday, I dubbed this week White Women Week, because they were all the three T's, they were absolutely that to the fullest effect. I substituted for a special education class and walked into a situation where there were no plans. There was no definitive like demarcation. This is where my math activities are. These are where the whatever, none of that. The kids are young. I was familiar with at least two of them. And so I kind of knew, okay, I know what I'm dealing with the kids, sort of. There was one child I wasn't familiar with. But the two paraprofessionals, I had seen one earlier another week allowing a young man to basically almost physically harm himself. And so I knew she was basically not going to be constructive at all that day, but I didn't understand how much she wasn't. And then the other lady, I worked with her several times in the past, and she, for some reason, didn't remember who I was. I said, okay, well, I'm Miss So-and-so. You know who I am. It's nice to see you again. Let's move on. Moving on, we're doing the projects for the day, and a young man tells me, hey, he's third grade. He says, Miss, you know, Irie, I can't stay here all day when there's a sub. My dad is going to have to pick me up at 11:30. So I said, okay, no sweat. So the trashy slash terroristic paraprofessional who decided to, without my advice, go call the dad to let him know there was a sub. She called the dad, found out he couldn't come at 11:30 as a young man expected. So she proceeded to tell the young child, hey, your dad is not coming until 2:30, which I suspect strongly she knew would cause him to have the response that he had. So when she did that, the young man said, well, I want to go home at 11:30 with my dad. She said, well, he's not coming and that's it. So you're just going to have to sit back down and do your work. So I'm like waving my hands. I'm like, hey, come on over here, trying to get him away from her. But by that time, it was too late. He started to, you know, yell and cry. So she said it again, a third time. He's not coming, but you can turn it around. I said, my God, this woman is making this young man, she's forcing this young man to have this maladaptive behavior. So then that's when he started screaming, kicking, destroying property almost. They had to get the other kids out, and the young man needed to actually be physically restrained. So when he was physically restrained finally by the head social worker, who is black, non-white black, I told her silently, I said, listen, I witnessed something today that I would like to report to you. It was, he didn't have this behavior on his own. He was provoked. So I wrote it up. So by that time of me writing up the report, I also reported it to my HR for the sub. So I feel like that was something correct and codified to do. I won't continue on because it was just a hellacious day. By the end of the day, I was accused by the lady that pretended she didn't know me to have given her an assignment off the clock. And she had her rep come, the paraprofessional rep come and say, hey, you know, you gave somebody something to do off the clock. And I said, who told you this? So she walks in the classroom while the rep is talking to me at the same time. I suppose she thought I wasn't going to say anything, but I did. I said, excuse me, would you come here for a second? And I said, you told your rep that I I asked you to do something off the clock? And she said, yeah, you told me to do it later tonight. I said, no, I said later today. It would be very helpful if you give me as much information on the students and their agenda as possible. There was no talk about off the clock later tonight. I said, if you thought that, that's your misinterpretation, not mine. And they did not expect that. So the rep says, well, I would like to speak my truth now. I said, I'm not sure what your truth would be considering you haven't been in the classroom at all today. So how about we wait for another ear and eye witness, such as the principal, so you can speak whatever you have to say? Because at this point, I feel as though I'm being accused of something I didn't do. And I mean, I feel like I did. I feel like I kept my codification and I was correct. And I don't know. I just know that it was very hard. That day was very hard. And as a punishment, because I was adamant about reporting what I saw and defending myself, they made sure that my assignment was changed from that special education class to a whole nother class in a whole different part of the building. It was really something to see. And yes, I'll mute my line now. Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Gus.
Thank you for sharing, Irie. Black self-respect again. Many of the folks who participated this week to report that this white woman, the whole time that you were sharing what happened with this student, it reminded me of Norm Stamper, suspected race soldier. He's been a guest on the program repeatedly. He is a former enforcement official, former chief of Seattle Police Department. And he talked about how he practiced racism as an enforcement officer. And he said that was one of his techniques, that he would just antagonize someone that he was going to arrest and just get them wound up, call them names, curse at them, whatever. And then he'd go, oh, let me get my nigger knocker and bye, yeah, I can crack you upside the head, put my cuffs on you. And, you know, oh, yeah, he was mouthing off. You know what they do? Run. I guess they don't just do that for older victims of racism. They start that one out in kindergarten, second, third grade, antagonize them. And then, oh, yep, call in the resource officer. We need Officer Slam down here. They've gotten unruly. So I'm so glad that you were able to report that and the black self-respect to stand and be honest about what you saw. I've talked about that phrasing, my truth. I've talked about that and how I think that's just deliberate racism for people that want to be deceptive so that my truth can be that 2 + 2 = 8 and your truth can be that 2 + 2 = 20. And we can just have all kinds of nonsense and never get to truth. What is? Not surprised about the punishment, the retaliation, them accusing you of having her slaving after hours or anything else. I think that's a great suggestion to wait until there is another witness so that there will not be any confusion or discrepancies about what is said, what is done. That is, I think, a great strategy and a great way to, you know, maintain composure in a difficult situation as well. Do we have another caller that dialed in that we've missed totally? Was there another person that dialed in who had a hand up that we not heard from at all? Grand, I guess we got everybody. Did any other folks have final comments that they wanted to make sure that they got in based on anything that they heard, whether suggestions for Irie? I know we have other educators, or any other comments, questions they wanted to share. We have about 7 minutes left in the program.
Can I be heard?
Heard both of you. We'll get everybody. Let's get retired firefighter first.
Okay. I think Ms. Irie was accurate, very accurate in her report, and based on from my years of working on a job, it matches with some of the things that I've did, some of the things that I've observed other victims of racism, white supremacy do that are successful, and if there is some future connection with those, not just those white people, because they do share information, that it would be to whereas white people will be reluctant the next time to try to take advantage of you because they know that this black person would speak clearly and precisely on her position, you know, at the workplace, and they would primarily move on to unfortunately create havoc with some other victim, but at least it won't be with you, or they'll be reluctant to do it. So keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Our other male caller who spoke up as well. Did you have commentary, sir?
Yeah, Gus. This may be a little. This is a comment in reference to a statement that you made. You said that in a system of racism, white supremacy, that logically speaking, it's logical to assume that all white people are practicing racism. Is that correct?
No, I definitely didn't say it that way today. To suspect system of racism, white supremacy. If the person is white, it's logical that you should be at minimum suspicious that they are racist white supremacists. There you go.
Okay, that I should be suspicious that they are.
Any non-white person. Okay. Any non-white person.
Right.
Oh, and just for clarity's sake, hang on one second, because that isn't really workplace racism related.
Okay.
Just in related to accuracy, I think
before
was said, Neely Fuller Jr. was mentioned, and it was said that you need a white person to prove that something is true. That is not
right.
Mr. Fuller says. What he says specifically is that in order to prove that racism was practiced, you need a white person. It is not just to prove
right.
that some. Hang on. Interrupting now. Now I do mind interrupting because
okay.
I don't talk over other people when they're talking. That is important.
No,
because
I was
it's not,
saying
you're talking
true.
Over
that's
me again.
Correct.
I'm going to mute your line. Hush, because this is important. That is important because it's not that general, Mr. Fuller's statement. Is very specific, and why he says that is because he says all the time, you don't go around calling white people racist willy-nilly. You need
right.
a white person to prove it. It's very specific, the context of that statement. It's not that you need a white person to prove that anything or that something is true. It's that you need a white person to prove that racism has been practiced. They are the authenticator on that one. That's what he says specifically. That I thought was very important to get that corrected. Woo. We have 3 minutes left. Hang on 1 second, sir. Do we have any other folks who had question, comment that they needed to get in?
Have you heard?
You can go ahead.
Okay. Gus, I'm in touch with someone who has most of the archives and really most of the really old ones. And he wanted to know, when is the latest, I guess, he can contact you in terms of getting them all, I guess, uploaded to one central location? I know that you have the Codify software developer helping you, so I figured, you know, between the three of us, you know, we could definitely get it done. So he just had that question, like, when is the latest, or is there a limit on when he can contact you, or could it be any time? Like, does it have to be by a certain time, within a year, within 5 months, 2 months, you know, something like that?
At his convenience, if he can contact me, that project, I am hoping to get started on that once I get moved back out of the temporary residence. So absolutely, the more help, presumably the more help, the easier, the better it would be. So much obliged. He can untiljustice@gmail.com. And absolutely, I would appreciate the assistance.
Okay, thank you. I'll meet my mind.
Mm-hmm. Caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. I just had two quick ones I wanted to share.
Both of these have to do with white supervisors. The first one is, it was reported to me by a non-white, non-black female that this particular white woman supervisor was at the front counter and said that her feet smelled. So she took her sandals off and she sprayed her feet with Lysol disinfectant. Okay. And it was in front of all of the females at the counter. So just totally just disgusting on that one. On the second one, I was coming back from bringing the receipt from the outgoing mail. And this was interesting because this goes into how some white people, they will help and assist you constructively. And this, my supervisor was doing that and does it from time to time. So I'm coming back with the receipt and it was raining outside. And so she says, how's everything going? And is everything okay? And is it raining? Did you dodge the bull? And she stops. She was about to say bullets. Did you dodge the drops? And I said, you know, I did get wet or whatever, but I'll be all right. I still got an umbrella. But she caught herself. Okay, so this is important. Now, that was just a small instance right there. Now, I've never even heard her say that, but I expect going into the job or into the workplace that something like that, like the nuances are important and things like that can occur. And that is racist right there, see? So just staying focused that and not even making it about your emotions and feelings, just going on the logic that they could exhibit that kind of speech and action. So, that's what I wanted to share.
If you had to, somebody said, why do you say that's racist? Her just changing her phrasing from, you know, did you dodge the book to did you dodge the rain? How would you explain that that's racist?
I would say that because given of how I've spoken out about racism on the job and she knows that about me and she quickly stopped herself. But she still said one syllable of the word and dodging bull. So I already know she was going to say bullet. And that in relation to me as a black person coming from her mind as a white woman, she still has that that racist indoctrination. So that's being attributed to me like dying or being shot possibly by a law enforcement officer.
Violence against black people that is required in the system of white supremacy. Talked about that as well. They were reading that thug, Aaron Hernandez, reading about him on the job. Violence, perpetual violence, particularly directed at black people. Anywho, we will be here tomorrow. Compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what went down over the last 7 days. What happened in Sri Lanka and the rest of it, that'll be tomorrow evening. If you have suggestions, gripes, complaints, suggestions for anything that we heard in the workplace, you can definitely drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. With that, I hope it was a constructive investment of your Friday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Race soldiers terrorize a lot of black people, and they take advantage of a lot of black people that they have poisoned with their narcotics. Let's keep our brain computers as clear as possible so that we can solve the problem. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, driver, or passenger. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no, that includes being off of the cell phone. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Hey, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.